everyone. Welcome to Glee Chat. We're up to episode 89 and we're still on our flashbacks project. I'm Natalie, Caitlin, Mitch and Jack, we're all here today to talk about the end of season one. We're going to be doing theatricality and then Journey to Regionals, the finale of season one. We know we've been off for a little while. That's sort of my fault. I had a very rushed trip overseas where I wasn't really able to access any recording equipment, and I really wanted to be on for the finale, so I kind of made them wait for me to come back. I'm very sorry to everyone who might have been expecting an episode sooner, but I will, yeah, hopefully this one will be worth it for you. If you haven't been keeping up with Glee Chat flashbacks, we are just doing this little project in the sort of fairly long hiatus before season six, where we're rewatching the most important episodes in chronological order of seasons one and two, at the very least. We started Glee Chat way back at the start of season three, so we'd love to catch up to that, and we might even do some special episodes from season three and four again to see what those were like as well. But if you have any thoughts, I guess, coming up to season two, about, you know, episodes we should watch, or just your memories of that time being in the Glee fandom or whatever, yeah, you can join us on Hyperbull on any of the posts for Glee Chat, or you can probably Twitter is the best way to get in touch with it, which is Glee_chat. We do have Instagram and things where we post, you know, pictures of stuff we come across. But if you want to communicate with us, Twitter is definitely the best bet. So everyone doing okay today? Hello. Mitch, what have you been up to in the couple of weeks since we've recorded? Very quickly.
Prepping for Halloween and law school work, along with Caitlin, who I know has been working pretty hard grading papers, as she's often telling us in Rewatchable.
It's true.
Yeah, because Caitlin is a legit teacher, much better than Will Schuster. you know, that's the dream, Caitlin, just be better than Will and you'll do fine. So that's been going okay?
Yeah, it's just really busy. I'm teaching three college English classes and they write lots of papers. So
That's so insane. Because you're not that old. Not to bring things into it, but like, does it feel weird? Does it like, oh my God, I am like, these people view me as a legitimate adult teacher. This is strange. Like, that's how I'd feel. I think you and I are about the same age and that would feel very strange to me. Or have you done a lot of prep? Are you sort of used to it?
Oh, it's kind of weird, but then there's so much of a generation gap, even just like, it's about 8 years between me and the freshman, There's a surprising generation gap in that small amount of time. So in some ways, I'm like, not much has changed since I was in college. And then other ways, I'm like, you are so alien to me.
It's so amazing. It's so cool, though. And then, because Jack, you would be teaching Jack, basically, because he's first year university. So that's kind of weird. How has that been going for you, Jack?
Yeah, right. It's winding down. I've only got, I think, three or four weeks left until my exams, so I'm just trying to stay on top of everything and study and all that. So it's pretty quiet for me right now, but yeah.
And what's your main subject? Like, what's your course in?
I'm doing psychology at the moment, so I've got to do a few, like, general health science courses that every other health science students do, like physio, nursing, I don't know, all that stuff.
Oh, wow.
But I might be changing. I'm thinking of changing into nursing next year. Just thinking seeing what to do. Because, I mean, with psychology, at the end of the road after 4 years, I'm not actually a registered psychologist and I'll be out of a job. Whereas nursing, I'll have a lot of opportunities then. So it's just stuff to think about.
Yeah. I knew someone in high school. Like, he did some environmental science for a couple of years before he kind of bit the bullet and was like, no, actually what I want to do is nursing. But I think it was actually a bit of a stigma for him because he was a straight boy and this was like 10 years ago or so. And it took a while for him. It took a while for him being away from his high school like environment and all the dudes he used to hang out to be like, you know what, I actually do want to do nursing. I'm going to go do that. But yeah, it would be good if you could do that. I think it would be nice. But
that's funny. That stigma still exists. I never even thought about it because I've wanted to be a nurse actually, like since I first started undergrad and was on a different path from like day one. Enough that I couldn't get into it. So I commend you, Jack and Natalie's friend.
Well, nursing, like nursing, like shouldn't even have that stigma because you can go off into so many different like categories of nursing. But I think people just label nurse as like the secondary option to a doctor, and like it's a female's job in like a general hospital, but like you can do mental health, nursing, I don't know, like pediatric stuff. There's so much stuff you can do. So
nurses do more than the doctors, always. Unless it's surgery, the nurses are there to like take your blood and, you know, give you your oxygen max and be there all night long. Like it's an intense job, and I'm not saying the doctors aren't, it's a whole different beast, but it's just, it's sad when people don't give nurses the credit that they deserve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
and there are nurses in this episode of Glee. Look at that connection.
Are there?
Oh, that's funny.
In this episode of Glee, are there?
Well, not theatricality of Journey to Regionals. I meant this episode of Glee.
Journey to Regionals. Child. That's true. Let's pretend we did that on purpose. Yeah. Let's pretend that yes, that you know, one day Jack will be there helping a teen mum give birth after she, you know, her waters break in the middle of her singing competition. That'll probably happen.
It'll be a very quick birth because everyone will be back to their competition within like 10 minutes.
Okay. Moving on. So theatricality is the first episode that we watched of the final few. A lot of those second half of season one were very kind of solid and plot heavy, so we did, you know, end up seeing a few of them. But theatricality, the main plot, well, like the start off of the plot is that Rachel spies on Vocal Adrenaline, finds out they're doing Lady Gaga in a very dramatic scene, and then Will decides the best idea here is to copy their ideas and assigns his Glee Club a Gaga and Theatricality Week, which he freely admits he doesn't know what the point was to. My main thought on that was, I hate you, Will. But I just wanted to open that up quickly to the group about, you know, the whole Gaga theme of the week. And, you know, I remember at the time everyone was very excited that they were doing a Lady Gaga episode and stuff like that. And just what, you know, what you thought of having that week's lesson, and the fact that they stole it from Vocal Adrenaline when Vocal Adrenaline, you know, hadn't technically done anything to them. And the fact that Will just decided that he was just going to do that with absolutely no teaching plan in mind. So, Caitlin, how did that make you feel?
Will Schuster is a horrible teacher, which is the theme of every week, basically. Yeah. He's the worst and constantly finds original ways to be awful. So kudos to your awfulness, Will Schuster.
You've found a new high point or low point, something.
Yeah. Setting the bar low for teachers. And then they spend, like, the entire next episode being like, Will, you're such an amazing teacher.
Jack, how about you in this Gaga situation? Like, overall, I mean, I personally kind of liked that they got to do the Gaga stuff. But kind of watching it back, I'm like, you literally just stole that from Vocal Adrenaline when they haven't technically done anything to you yet at this point. So, yeah, Jack, how did you feel about the Gaga week?
Yeah, I felt the same. I mean, in general, I don't really like when people think the best way to beat somebody in a competition is to steal their ideas. Like, I mean, just come up with your own ideas and be better than that. Like, it's exactly the same time. Like, it's pretty much the exact same plot line in season 5 when they try and when they try and be just as crazy as Throat Explosion.
Throat Explosion,
Yeah, and it's just, I don't know, so that was a retread there, but I don't know. And I like Lady Gaga, but I think that a lot of her music, the music doesn't match the message that she's trying to say, if that makes sense, so I don't know, I was kind of neutral on, even though I really did like the music in this episode, but the whole ideas thrown around in this episode I didn't really agree with, like, in terms of the theme, so.
Mitch, what were your sort of memories of the Gaga episode from when it happened at the time and compared to kind of, I guess, this rewatch of it? Like, did you like it or did you kind of find any problems with Will making this lesson?
Well, it's funny, too, that it's considered a lesson because I remember there being a lot more Gaga songs in this episode than there ended up being. So it was funny to me that it was the theme to be Gaga's theatricality, I suppose, as opposed to Kisses, which was kind of just shoehorned in there. And then it was if it already wasn't a weak lesson from the fact that he stole it and didn't have a point for it, it was even weaker from the fact that he detracted it from it by letting the boys do whatever the hell they wanted.
The boys versus girls, Gaga versus Kiss thing is something I really want to talk more about when we talk about the Finn situation in this episode, because it's a very strong Finn episode, obviously. It's a very, very important moment in that story. But in general, the other thing that kind of, the one person that does get to benefit a little bit from this lesson, at least, one of the two birds with one stone that Will is killing, is Tina, because Figgins has taken against her goth clothing because he thinks there's a cult of vampires because and he seems to think that the vampires are actually real. This is literally my favorite Tina episode of all time. This goth vampire plot is, like, for some reason, my favorite Tina moment of all time. That's probably not a compliment. That's probably, like, just an example of how little that they gave her that was decent, but I always found this ridiculously hysterical, mainly because I find Figgins amazing. So, yeah, I mean, I love Tina in this episode. I'd like to hear everyone's thoughts on that ridiculous side plot, and also what your favourite Gaga outfit ended up being of the costumes, because, you know, one of the things that Tina was doing was, you know, finding a new look, and she decides her new look is going to be like an effervescent bubble Lady Gaga outfit. So, yeah, Mitch, thoughts on Tina and thoughts on the Gaga costumes?
Well, you've hit my point head on the nail that the most unique costume and memorable one was Tina's, with good reason, because she was looking for her new look. I thought it was really fun, and I was thinking about it, like, I almost want to do that for Halloween this year, but I don't know where I'd find different sized bubbles that would work like that, or, you know, like, what are they even in the first place? And then I got to thinking about the costumes in general, and of course, the budget question came to mind for everything in this episode, and the costumes especially, not only from a money, you know, way, but maybe like from a
talent.
Yeah, like no one in Glee Club, but maybe Tina knows how to sew, as we've had confirmed in the show. And she really wouldn't be able to do as much as they all had in like a night. It was ridiculous. Yeah. But they were great costumes, though. Like I didn't recognize every single one. But I did think that they were really fun to, like, have Santana and that black lacy get up, and then Rachel's too were really cool, and there were a lot of really fun little character moments with, like, what the characters thought of their costumes, like Brittany's, you know, with her lobsters on her eyes, and she's like, I look awesome.
Yeah, Caitlin, do you, I mean, I don't know if everyone here is a Lady Gaga fan or not. I sort of fluctuate. I appreciate some of what she does. But yeah, did you like the Gaga costumes? Did you have a particular one that you liked, or did you just think it was somewhat ridiculous?
Let's say the first time I watched this, I had no idea who Lady Gaga was. So that was fun. I heard
You're
the
like,
name
what
thrown around.
Is going on?
Like, I had heard her name thrown around, but I had never heard her music before. Mm-hmm. So, because I'm one of those people who just does not listen to the radio at all. Mm-hmm. So I just had no idea. So I was like, well, this is something. Okay.
Yeah.
But
this is happening.
Yeah, yeah, this is a thing. Okay. But looking back, like, I really love Santana's, mostly because she's, like, my favorite in this song. She just has a really fierce moment when she gets her solo lines, and I just really love her for some reason and her outfit in this one.
Mm-hmm. I personally always really liked Quinn's, and then I got some validation in the next the couple of seasons on when she ended up having that pink hair, because I love Quinn's, like, the pink extensions and the eyelashes and stuff. I never remember Lady Gaga wearing that costume. I remember, like, the hair bow one and the, you know, some of the other ones, I love how Quinn looks, but I also would have been interested to see, even, you know, at the end when Finn has his rubber dress, I know that, you know, Glee has a really high production value and they want stuff to look amazing. And later on, heaps far down the line, we get an excuse for how they always have all of that fancy stuff because, you know, whatever.
April's money, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, at this point, they don't. I don't believe. And I would have actually liked to see them look homemade, if you know what I mean. Like Rachel's crappy, like, Beanie Baby one. Like, I would have liked to see, you know, that the thing was obviously made out of shoeboxes or something, that it didn't, you know, cost thousands of dollars to make. And I think that in general, like, Glee could have been really cool if their, like, props department had committed to that kind of thing, like, to making the stuff look awesome but have it, like, made in the way that the facilities that those kids would have had, if you know what I mean. But
yeah,
you know,
like the home ec room.
Whatever, whatever.
But Jack, Natalie, I wanted to revisit a point.
Go on, yeah.
Sure, I wanted to revisit a point actually on April on Home. She gave them the auditorium, and that's the last we hear of in canon of their money up until season 5, right? And then it was revealed all this time that she was giving
them
money.
So that happened in Home that she gave them the auditorium. I mean, I don't know if the, you know, Glee Club budget was paying for these costumes, and if they, you know, anyway, the money thing is going to kill us if we hang on to it, because it's like, why couldn't you have just paid Figgins, you know, to have a bigger budget and keep the Glee Club? Like, why? Anyway, I think that these people, given that Rachel, you know, costume was crap because her dads couldn't sew, I think we assume that all the girls made these at home, you know, with their mums or their abuelas or whatever. But Jack, you were a fan of Quinn's as well, were you?
Oh, yeah, Quinn's is awesome. And do you notice how, like, when she's crying at the end, when Puck is singing Beth?
Yeah.
And she gets a little teardrop, like, right at the end of her eyelash. I just think that's really, really cool. But she looked yeah, amazing.
Brittany looked ridiculous, of course, but, you know.
Did she have a teardrop on her eyelashes? I was wondering this whole time, like, what she felt, what Dana felt when she was in this episode. She read the script, and it was like, you're going to be wearing extremely long eyelashes, but you're going to be bawling your eyes out while the Men of Glee Club sing it to your baby.
it's something from the, you know, something to add to the resume, I suppose.
I can't cry with extended eyelashes.
Speaking of that, that's another tiny side plot in this episode, is the sort of the Puck and Quinn, you know, let's call a baby Jackie Daniels, and she's just like, shut up, I'm not keeping the baby, I'm not naming the baby, leave me alone. And he is still very sort of, you know, he doesn't really know how to handle himself, but it's still very clear that what his emotions are is that he has a lot of feelings about, you know, loving this child and about sort of doing the best for Quinn, just, you know, not acting on it, you know, very well because he's an idiot. But he does, you know, sort of learn from the whole theatricality and the, you know, oh, sometimes it could be understated or whatever the hell they're doing, you know, learning about Kiss. He sings Beth to her, and, you know, as a performance, you know, about his sort of care for, you know, her and the baby, and how possibly it's, you know, the right thing that he's not going to be able to be around and care for her, you know, that it is the best thing to give her up. But he asks if they can name her that, and if he can be there when she's born. And that's, as Jack mentioned, you know, with her crying in the Gaga costume. And I really love that, because I'm gross about, like, Puck having emotions, but that little side plot, does anyone else particularly love that, or am I just a strange, you know, person flying my Puck flag in the corner? Mitch, what did you think of that little kind of progression in that story?
It was super sweet. I really appreciated it. And this is another moment where it's so cheesy that a name in the show fits with the song, but I like it.
It's the best done one, in my opinion. It's like, sometimes they'll, like, change a song to have a lyric, or they'll do, like, you know, what did Jessie's Girl or whatever. Like, you know, I think that this is a cute, like, if they're naming her after this song because of what this song has to say, I think that's quite sweet. No, I don't hate that.
Well, yeah, and just to the fact that it relates to a really strong moment in the Glee Club where everyone in the group really is, I guess they're getting along, other than the fact that Finn's like, we don't like girly, frilly costumes. But other than that, there isn't a lot of conflict going on in the group, and then Finn ruins that, of course, with Kurt. It just feels like every point I'm going to try and bring up about there being harmony in the group this episode, Finn's going to knock it down.
Oh, well, I'm not sure if that's, you know, completely, I mean, it is. It's somewhat true, but it's you know, that was sort of more between him and Kurt than the Glee Club dynamic. But
right. Well, it was definitely a sweet moment for Quinn and Puck to look back to whenever they hear the name Beth in the future, to know that their daughter Beth was named after just kind of like a moment when they're all together doing their thing, and Puck came together with all the guys, and they all united to show kind of like a keep holding on moment for Quinn again.
Yeah. Caitlin, how about you in this song and this moment?
Was this the episode that they had the flashback to the night that she got pregnant, or was that the
other one? No, that's regionals. That's regionals.
Because okay.
I've mixed feelings about that as well.
Okay. So since it's not, I think it's a sweet moment. I don't have any particular attachment to the storyline, so I just think Puck is sweet in that moment, and I like when he can be understated and emotional. So it was nice.
Jack?
Yeah, I loved it as well. You know, I'm a big Puck fan too, so it's nice. And did you say, I think, I don't know if this was like maybe direction by whoever to give to Corey, but he seemed a bit awkward.
He looked hurt. Noticed that as well. The very end of that, when he's sort of watching them together, he's still bothered by it, which I thought was really, you know, quite realistic, honestly. I noticed that as well, and it was really well done, actually. But yeah,
you guys have hawk eyes for that, like in the background Puck Kurt stuff, because I just don't see these little moments.
Yeah. Well, this it's at the end of the song, and he's on the end of the row, and he's, you know, Puck's over holding, you know, Quinn's hand or whatever he's doing, asking if he can be there, and Finn's just kind of got this like fuck this kind of like, he participated and he helped, but he's just kind of shaking his head, and he's still bothered by it, and it's really well done. Like it's really well done.
Yeah, I appreciate
it. Yeah, I would say the second biggest plot, or perhaps equal first, depending on where your passions lie, I suppose, in this episode is the Rachel and Shelby relationship, where basically they go to spy on Vocal Adrenaline. Shelby sings a song, and in that moment, Rachel knows it's her mother because who can tell? I don't know, she recognized her voice from the tape, or she just knew because she's singing the same song, it'd be her, that she would sing. I don't care. Anyway.
I always figured it was that. It was the tape.
I'm assuming it's the tape. Like, she recognized her voice, and she's just like, oh. But I couldn't remember if she'd heard Shelby sing before or anything. Anyway, she goes and reveals, you know, Shelby as, you know, her daughter. We sort of see the follow-up to that conversation in which it seems like Shelby fully admits that, you know, she planted everything. Like, the conversation they have, we sort of only come in about halfway through, but it seems quite frank. Like, it's not like, you know, Rachel says, like, you know, how did you know it was time for you to find me? So she knew that Shelby was sort of luring her there or whatever, you know, and even possibly Jesse's role in it. You know, it wasn't like, oh, my God, what a happy accident. I'm going to pretend that I didn't totally send a boy to creep on you on my behalf, if you know what I mean. But that being said, you know, they kind of have, it becomes quite overwhelming, and they sort of, you know, Shelby kind of pieces out, you know, immediately, and then they sort of have another go where they're like, oh, yeah, you know, let's have a go at being mother and daughter, and she makes her the Gaga costume, and then eventually they kind of both, you know, have a bit of a turnaround about it, like, or at least Shelby has a turnaround and Rachel admits she has sort of disconnect as well. So, Caitlin, like, you know, this overall, you know, story throughout the episode, or even what, you know, Will ended up saying to Shelby, you know, I don't know why he got involved, but, like, what did you think of that kind of, you know, do you think it was a bit of a waste of a plot, or if you think it's, like, a realistic take on how that might be?
I think overall the way it progressed makes sense that, you know, you think you want these things very much, and then you get it, and you're like, it's not what you're expecting, and you don't have the reaction you're expecting. I get that. So that's not what bothers me. It just seems like it was really abrupt that we had a lot of buildup, and then it just sort of ends. Yeah. I would have liked to have seen them trying to explore their relationship and see if they could make it work maybe over, like, another episode before they decided to end it.
Yeah, just like, oh, hi, bye, okay, we're done with this. Like, you know, yeah, it's a bit weird. Jack, what about you with the Shelby and Rachel plot in terms of the, you know, kind of abruptness of it, or the basic, you know, immediate disconnect once they, you know, they try to be mother and daughter and then they're like, nope.
I thought it was really well done, because they really honestly could have just made them be the happiest people in the world, and, you know, this is perfect, this is what I wanted, you know, like with Rachel. But I really, really, really did like how they show that it's just not what it could have been. Like, just because they are mother and daughter does not mean that they're going to be so close naturally. And it just, I find it really interesting because it raises a lot of, like, the debate that I've been having to learn about in the last few years, actually, like nature versus nurture stuff, like in terms of child rearing and being raised. So I really, really enjoyed that. And I did think that she only found her based on the voice, like, and also because they look strikingly similar.
Yeah. I thought that that moment, you know, that Shelby said, I mean, I think that she was kind of a bit harsh. Like, I get it. And they both kind of said, like, you know, Rachel said as well, I should want to fall into your arms and be all, and I just don't. And I think that that's, you know, it's good that they both had the disconnect rather than just one of them. And it, like, you know, being like, oh my God, I'm so hurt. But that being said, I did think Shelby was a bit like, oh, I've got a new toy and now I'm casting it aside, if you know what I mean. Like, I thought it was a bit irresponsible of her, I suppose. But I think what she said about the, you know, the story Rachel told about her water cup and her dad's and stuff was true. And it was a nice note to, you know, like adopted, you know, people like, you know, who are like, you know, that is what it takes to be parenting. Like, just because, you know, someone was your biological parent, like, doesn't necessarily mean that you didn't have a full life or anything like that, or something was missing. And I think, like, the only thing that was really missing from Rachel was, like, a fantasy rather than an actual presence. Like, she was just dreaming up a thing, if you know what I mean. And it's not like she was, it's not like her mother was, like, someone who wanted to have her and then had to give her up. She was organized to have her for her father, if you know what I mean. So it's not exactly a tragic story, which is why...
Well, to a certain extent, I'd say it is, Natalie, because she can't have babies anymore.
Really. It is, I think, and that's the thing. That's the only reason she seems to have, you know, want the connection with Rachel is that she's found she can't have her own babies anymore. And the way that, you know, she was saying, you know, do you regret it and all of that kind of thing, it sounds to me like she was... You know, they're talking about a circumstance where someone was forced to give up their own child as opposed to someone being paid money to carry a child for people who want to have a child. And, like, it wasn't like, oh, my baby that I have to get rid of. It was, you have participated in a transaction on purpose to do this. And I understand that, you know, people are going to have a connection to a child that they've carried and stuff, but it's not quite the same thing of, like, the tragic circumstance, like even Quinn's or something like that. So... You know, it's not like she would have had the option not to give Rachel up, if you know what I mean. So that's why how I found her sort of Shelby sob story a little bit like, of course, you know, I don't know what feelings get invoked in a, you know, a biological mother when carrying a child. Like, maybe it is very like, you know, she wanted to turn around and be like, no, you can't have the baby. She's mine now. But it's not exactly the same as her being forced to give up the baby. So I did find her sob story a bit, but anyway.
I'll just have you know, Natalie, that I was trying to, like, write the little show note for that part, and cutely enough, I wrote, was Shelby tragic, or, as Natalie puts it, .. question mark? I really appreciate
right,
just, like,
well, thank you.
Because that's right, because you're right now. You have me on that edge.
Is that just me? Like, I don't know. Does anyone else have any thoughts about that? Like, you know, the whole, you know... purposeful surrogate, basically. Like, it, yeah. I don't know if anyone else had thoughts on that, but I just found her sub-story a little bit much given that she was, you know, choosing to do that as opposed to it being, like, a forced choice that she had to make, like, that it was always meant to be a disconnected choice.
I just think that she's incredibly selfish as well. Like, I mean, I don't understand her pain from, like, a personal level because obviously I've never done this. But, like, it's really, really, really selfish of her to, like, honestly pretty much breaking the adoption rules and, like, making Rachel through all this, like, emotional stress, even though it was handled like a joke saying that her therapist is moving into the spare room. But she's going through a lot of emotional, like, stress right now. And then Shelby realizing, I mean, I know it's a lot more deeper than this, but then Shelby pretty much ultimately realizes that it's not what she actually had wanted. So she's put Rachel through all this stuff for nothing, just for her own selfish gains, and didn't even play out well in the end. So, I don't know, Shelby does bother me from time to time in that sense.
Yeah. Does anyone else have any thoughts on the whole Shelby-Rachel situation before we go on to the Finn and Kurt and gender and lampgate situation?
I guess I personally have a slight sympathy for Shelby, just in the fact that I can no longer have children either. So yeah. That sent, I had surgery stuff like so Shelby did, so I can't. And it just, I can understand, like, I get these moments where I really regret that I won't be able to do that and have my own. So I sort of just, like, when she was talking to Will, I was kind of like, I feel that in a way I probably wouldn't have otherwise. So in just the sense of not being able to have that future, I kind of feel her.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that is quite understandable. Like, I think that, you know, her making that choice after she finds out she can't have more children is certainly more understandable and less whimsically selfish than it would have been, you know, otherwise. But, yeah, it is definitely, you know, that was a part of it that was taken out of her control. So, you know, it's a little bit, the only thing about that that I was a bit about, again with the but was that, you know, she was kind of like, I wanted my baby and Rachel's this real person. And I'm like, well, I know that you didn't raise her, but do you not like her? Like, is there something wrong with the real person that she is that you don't want to, like, be her friend or something like that? Like, that's the kind of bit that I was like, she's like, I don't want this real person that I haven't contributed to, if you know what I mean. I felt that was a bit weird. Obviously she wants to raise a child as well, but I did find that a bit as I said.
Oh yeah, I think there's a strong degree of selfishness there that kind of shows that maybe she wasn't quite ready for that relationship, but
yeah,
on another level I did feel bad for her,
I guess. Yeah,
I have a counter to what you guys were just talking about, of how she's not able to become pregnant anymore. She probably thought, yes, this is an arranged pregnancy. This is kind of a test run, all right? I can see how I deal with the pregnancy. I get a lot of money for this. And then I really could kind of just check up with the baby again if I wanted to. Or no, actually, she couldn't have because she did sign an agreement. But then after that, she couldn't. So it was like, wow, that was really my only shot, and I wasted it on money and a dream that didn't even happen.
Well, I mean, that I think was the point. Like, that was why she did it. It's very Princess Diaries. In the Princess Diaries, I don't know about in the movie, because I hate the movie, but in the books, the reason that her father comes and finds her is because he had testicular cancer and wasn't able to have any more legitimate babies in, like, a relationship, that he goes and, you know, marries someone. So she's his only heir, and that's why she becomes the princess and the proper heir. But yeah, in the books, I think the father is dead, and I don't know. In the movie, I think the father is dead, and the movie's very saccharine, and I don't like it. The books are hilarious and very snarky. So anyway,
this is like the fifth time I've heard you talk about that. It's funny that
the Princess Diaries. Yeah, really? Do I talk about that a lot?
No, it's a good thing, because I love that movie, and it's funny to me that the book would be even better and would, like, make a mockery of that movie.
They're really different. They're set in New York, and they're very snarky, and they're very
to San Francisco, right?
Yeah. And anyway, we don't need to talk about The Princess Diaries, but yeah, the books are incredibly different, and just the people are, it's all a little bit like harsher and funnier and kind of a bit more of a mockery. But the dad is very much alive in the books, and he had testicular cancer and chemo and couldn't have any more children. So, you know, that's why she ended up becoming the heir, even though she was illegitimate. Anyway,
see,
I don't know
plot.
If Shelby
that
would have
worked a lot better.
Yeah. I don't know if Rachel is exactly the same as Princess Mia Thermopolis, but we'll move on from that swiftly, shall we?
The heir to Broadway, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. The Finn and Kurt plot. Now, this is one of the most important parts of the show. This is one of the most important parts, you know, of the episode, of the season, and probably of all of Glee, is Finn's, you know, growing uncomfortability with sort of Kurt's attention and how that ends up affecting him, you know, in his world, basically. Because I think that this is really well crafted. I think it's really well put together, and you kind of see, you know, what his actual problem is and how, because he's sort of a dumb teenage boy, how he starts taking that out on other things around him. And, I mean, a few of the things we see is, you know, our first serious look at, like, Azemio and Kurovsky. Like, we've seen them in the season before, throughout season one. This is the first episode we've watched on flashbacks that really has a serious scene with them, you know, with several scenes, you know, with them both harassing Kurt and Tina about their Gaga outfits and them harassing Finn in the bathroom as well. And then there's the narrative of Finn, you know, going to Schuster and, you know, saying that the, you know, he and the boys don't want to do Lady Gaga. They don't feel comfortable doing Lady Gaga, you know, and, you know, Will's like, you're right. We do what the girls want. Let's do what you want, boy. And it's all that's all a bit. Again, I am not a fan of that moment. I think that Will should have done some better teaching, not necessarily forced everyone to do Gaga. I think he should have come up with some better ideas in the first place, and he should have tackled what Finn's issues were rather than just sort of agreeing with him. I'll stop there and just kind of get everyone's thoughts on the Gaga versus Kiss versus, you know, because they're both, you know, wearing ridiculous clothes and makeup and stuff like that. Finn's only hung up is he doesn't want to dress up as a girl and sing girl songs. And that is mainly because of his current feelings about Kurt. But Jack, I'll go to you first. In that moment of, you know, that sort of Finn becoming more and more prickly and going to Schuster about, you know, not wanting to do Gaga, what did you think of that? Like, what did you think of that when you originally saw it versus kind of what do you think of it now?
Well, still, like, watching it right now, I still think that, like, the two plot lines, well, this plot line bled over into the Lady Gaga Kiss one quite well. Like, it's not really mentioned as much that he's so upset about Kurt, and that is why, well, he's got a lot of issues with Kurt, and that's why he doesn't want to dress up like a girl. It's not really addressed, but it's, like, very implied, which I really, really enjoyed.
It's very tangible. It's one issue that's making him edgy about all of this stuff. Yeah, I think that, and I think they show that well. But anyway, go on, sorry.
Yeah, because different plot lines in other episodes either, like, don't connect, or they connect so obviously and so heavy-handed that, like, you know... Like, the theme of this week is something, and therefore this means that, and that means that, you know. So I really enjoyed the subtleness of this plot, and it actually makes for really, really good character development. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I mean, did you have any thoughts about the way Will handled that?
Not really, to be honest. I mean, we did really discuss this in the Madonna episode. I mean, we didn't, but, like, the show did. They're like, you know, it's great to be a boy and boys can sing girl songs and yada yada. But I don't know. I didn't really have any problems with the way Will handled it. Like, it's nice that he's giving the boys what they want. However, he probably could have spoken to me a bit more about his feelings. But yeah.
Yeah. Caitlin, how about you? Like, just obviously this entire situation with Finn and Kurt and Kiss and Will and Lady Gaga and, you know, all sorts of things. There's a lot more to it. But at this point in the episode, like, what did you think of that situation with Finn and Will?
It's not one of Will's best teaching moments, clearly.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just sort of, I guess if Will were a better teacher, he would have tried to talk to Finn about it and continued their really creepy, uncomfortable relationship that they have going. But
yeah.
I don't know, I think Will is just too oblivious to recognize that there's something going on under the surface of this situation, and it's just like, oh, yeah. We do sing lots of girl things. Maybe that's not comfortable for boys because gender roles. Ha ha ha, Emma, go make me a sandwich. Like,
yeah, pretty much. Sorry, Caitlin.
Will has very traditional views on gender roles, and that's not
it's like
surprising.
He didn't even realize that the problem there might have been, you know, something else, or that his problem could have been like, okay, Finn, cool, you've presented, like, you want to do Kiss, let's talk about how, like, okay, you don't want to do about Lady Gaga, let's look at some artists of all different sorts of things that you know, represent the same thing. And, you know, with Kiss, you've got these, you know, insane Gaga-esque costumes, you know, more makeup than Lady Gaga's wearing. Like, be like, what is the issue here? What is it that you think is different about this to this, if you know what I mean? And just actually explore that issue. But Will's like, oh, no, of course. You want to be a boy that dresses up in makeup, not a woman. Okay, that's fine. Just as long as you know you're a boy, that's fine. Like, which, I mean, you know, whatever it takes for someone to feel comfortable, but, you know, I don't know, the way that Will was just like, yeah, you're right, we do always do what the girls want. Damn those pesky girls. I was just a bit like, okay.
Anyway, Mitch, did you have any particular thoughts, like, at this point with Finn's sort of uncomfortability or anything like that?
Yeah, I don't really see his point, Finn's point, that they always do what the girls want to do. That's not true. I mean, it's coming down to a whole bunch of gender stuff and whether or not Finn himself, not, I suppose, even Kurt or the club, considers Kurt to be a girl because he associates himself with the girls so much. Because he's a boy, and he mm-hmm. often gets his way, too. It's not just like... It usually, I find it to be, in my own interpretation of the show Glee, the loudest voices are Mercedes, Rachel, and Kurt. So it really seemed like... A really ignorant comment from Finn, separate of this whole relationship he has going on with Kurt. So at that point, kind of torqued me enough to be like, okay, I really can't even see where Finn's trying to come from right now. He doesn't have a justified basis to start off with to even then go on and say, this is okay because, like you're saying, I know my boy as Kiss. Like, ugh. And it was funny, too, because, I mean, the bullies make fun of him just as much as they would have if he was wearing his little rubber dress, I suppose. Maybe a little bit less.
Yeah.
They tell him to go to the girls' bathroom putting on his Kiss makeup. So to me, it was just like, I don't think that Finn understands that often, even in theater, gender roles are a lot more fluid than they would be in the real world. Because they're, I mean, damn, look at, like, Shakespeare's old plays, all played by men, even with Romeo and Juliet, for instance, right? So it's not an odd thing for a man or a woman to kind of switch a gender or take up attributes of another gender for a show. And that's why I was really torqued at Finn, because I thought he learned a little bit about theater, enough to know that, at least. But maybe he still has to yet do Rocky Horror to really learn what's going on.
I think that the entire situation comes down to Finn is edgy and uncomfortable about Kurt trying to control him and mold him, and that he doesn't know how to put it into words like that, that he's just being like, I don't want to do this girl thing, basically, even though he's sung girl songs before and that he's, you know, just one crazy costume versus another crazy costume. It's not like Kurt's Gaga costume was an outfit that Gaga has worn. It's just a Gaga-esque man's costume, if you know what I mean. He's not wearing a woman's costume. And you know, Finn just seems to have this, you know, this issue with Kurt trying to control him, which is, you know, pretty understandable given that what we have happen is, you know, Bert asking Finn and Carol to move in with them and Kurt orchestrating this, you know, surprise party. And he even says, like, at the party, like, he was like, you know, we're going to redecorate. They're going to have to share a room, like share Kurt's basement bedroom. And even then he says, you know, oh, it's okay, we can redecorate, you know, we'll just, you know, we'll make it a perfect example of, you know, who you are and who I want you to be. And then he's like, who you want to be, if you know what I mean. Like, it's not subtle. Like, Kurt is terrible to him. And it's really getting to him. And that is unfortunately making him sort of uncomfortable about basically everything that Kurt stands for. Obviously I would have a lot more sympathy to Kurt's side of things if Kurt wasn't being such a little fucking shitbag. Sorry, but he is.
It is absolutely ridiculous that he, let alone, slips out that he's looking to change Finn and then tries to cover it up. But the fact that he's trying to change Finn, you don't change people. That doesn't happen, no matter how old or young you are. I really do feel that you should know that. And it's really ridiculous that he's like, no, I'm not trying to make you gay to like me or just force you to like me in general as a person. And when it's very obvious, and I don't know, I won't get too heated, I won't get too much into this debate, because I know I would, like, just kind of explode. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff going on in Lampgate, as you put it.
It is obviously, you know, an important part of the episode. And I do, okay, like, if we're going to go on very, you know, I'll just give a summary of obviously what ends up happening is, you know, that they have a few altercations while attempting to share the bedroom. Kurt redecorates it. Finn flips out, basically, you know, and basically he honestly tries very hard to explain to Kurt what the problem is without, you know, outright, you know, calling a spade a spade. But he, you know, tries to tell him about how he feels uncomfortable, ends up, you know, snapping in a bad way,
you know, which Bert overhears, and then Bert sort of gives him this amazing takedown, which is, you know, absolutely deserved, except for the fact that Kurt is being a little shit. And then Kurt sort of, you know, Finn goes and thinks about what he's done and ends up sort of making it up to Kurt, I suppose, by coming and rescuing him from getting beaten up in a giant Lady Gaga red shower curtain dress. You know, he commits to the Gaga thing to show Kurt his support. And this whole scenario of the faggy lamp situation, as we'll call it, is huge, you know, huge moment for Glee. What I found interesting about rewatching it, at least for myself, you know, while I do, you know, agree, I very much still, you know, agree with Kurt in Kurt's defense to, you know, Azemia and Kurovsky and when teen, you know, they were harassing him and Tina. I agree with everything he said there, and I'm like, yeah, great moment for Kurt. Between the Kurt and Finn situation, you know, except for, you know, Finn sort of slipping up and starting to use those slurs, all of my empathy is with Finn watching this episode now. And when I watched it the first time, it would have been all with Kurt. I would have been like, oh, dumb boy, he ended up learning his lesson, good. My 90% of my empathy now is with Finn and how hard he was trying and what that struggle was like. So I don't know, is that's something that's definitely changed for me, like in retrospect. Mainly I had Kurt rose colored glasses the first time I was watching it, but yeah, that's sort of how I see that now. And obviously the champion here is actually Bert Hummel, because everything he said was absolutely amazing and true and a perfect example of, like, you know, damaging attitudes and things like that. But yeah, in sort of watching Finn struggle with that, I felt so bad, and I thought Kurt's behavior was so bad as well. It's not like it deserved slurs, but it was so bad that I just, my empathy has gone a 180 in who I was caring about there. So is that, you know, how does everyone else feel about sort of that entire situation? Jack, I'll go to you first. I know this episode is pretty important for you.
This episode is fine. Like, it's not one of my favorites or anything, but I think I'm in the same boat as you. Like, first rewatching, I think I did have the Kurt glasses on, and just everything he does is so justifiable, and because he's gay, and because, you know, he's just, everything he does is fine. But rewatching, I'm like, no, stuff that, like, he is completely manipulating Finn, gotten to a point where none of it's gone his way. And he's that shitty about it. And it even makes me, I mean, and Finn shouldn't have said what he had said. And using that, the word that he used, is like one of the, like, things that really ticks me off. Like, you can call me whatever you want, but if you call me that, then I'm not going to be happy about it. But obviously don't call me whatever you want. That's kind of mean, but still. yeah, so I don't know. And it really makes me annoyed that when I what Bert said was absolutely great. Like, he couldn't have said anything, like, better. It was just, it was fantastic what he had said, and it makes me annoyed that he's saying it as, it's really hard to put this without sounding mean. Like,
you, I don't wish, like, it had been Kurt more deserved.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
That, yeah. Yeah. You wish.
Kurt doesn't deserve that at the moment.
He doesn't. No. Kurt doesn't deserve the defending, basically. Even exactly, though the slur exactly was bad, Kurt didn't deserve that amount of defense, because of, if you're looking objectively at the situation, taking the slur out of it, Kurt didn't deserve that amount of defense. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's exactly, you couldn't have said
yeah,
it better.
That's what I thought as well.
Yeah.
Caitlin, how about you in this situation?
I'm pretty much in the same boat that, you know, something that I really love so much about the way Finn is written is that he has a lot of failings, but I think one of his greatest assets is that he always grows from his mistakes, that he does a lot of stupid things and he learns. So this was kind of a learning moment for him. He realized that these kind of ingrained things that he says without thinking are hurtful and he should not be saying them, because even if he doesn't think that just hearing it and perpetuating it is very damaging. So I think it's good that Bert said what he did to make Finn realize how serious what he said was. But at the same time, Kurt is so past being over the line that it's not funny, that he's just, it's so beyond uncomfortable. And he has, he's just so uncomfortable with what he's doing.
Yeah, and that's how I feel about Finn, what you said, Caitlin. And I've said it before, like, he always makes mistakes. And at the time, like, watching it the first time, it did really annoy me just how much he'd stuff up. But seeing it in the long run and you see how much he actually grows, it's just also worth it now, especially on the rewatch.
Yeah, it's, yeah, I feel like the whole season, I've just felt his, like, struggle to, like, he has emotions that he just doesn't know what to do with because he's not, like, he's just not that advanced or he's not that equipped and he doesn't know sort of where to put anything that he's feeling or how to say anything that he's feeling in, like, a reasonable, like, you know, mature way. And it's just so painful to watch him sometimes, like, you know, struggle with that. Yeah. But it is so well done. It's so well done, whereas, you know, other people are a bit more black and white, and I don't know, Kurt, Finn was trying so hard, even in that conversation before he started snapping about, you know, redecorating the room, he was trying so hard, like, he was, you know, he was dropping some truth bombs, but he was trying so hard, and Kurt was really just, like, is he that oblivious, or is he just that stubborn? Like, does he, like, what is in Kurt's head? Like, him just turning around and giving that, you know, that barb, you know, giving that slur, is Kurt just like, oh my God, where did this come from? I can't believe this has happened to me, if you know what I mean. Like, is this, like, how does he not understand what he's doing? I don't get it. But
yeah, Natalie,
anyway.
Like, those moments, Mitch, that yeah. Kurt, like, he kind of gets his angry face on. His I packed your angry eyes. He, like, puts it right on, and he's just... he's like, they're just curtains, anyway. Finn! And I'm like, oh, you have no reason to be as upset as you are right now, Kurt, and you are raising the situation to the point that it's getting. And I am so, so against Kurt in this scene. And that's what I was kind of boiling about before we started into this conversation, yeah. Natalie, that... I think you've hit the head on the nail. That if the slur was not in this scene, there is no reason whatsoever for anyone to feel bad for Kurt. The slur is legitimate. If it wasn't for that, Kurt was a douche. He was trying to change Finn, openly admitted that, is always trying to get him to like him. He's making Finn feel uncomfortable sexually that he can't even be in his own home. Yes, those are all very legitimate points to get someone to the breaking point that Finn reached.
And the thing is, Kurt seems to be taking it, or Bert, or, you know, whoever's seeing the situation, or maybe even how, you know, other people would have viewed it, like, back when they first saw it, as, you know, oh my God, Finn's being so homophobic, he doesn't want to share a room, he doesn't want to get changed in front of a gay kid. If that had just been, like, you know, if Sam Evans had been a gay kid, if you know what I mean, and they'd just been, like, having a, you know, hangout, or Blaine, even, like, you know, Blaine and Sam hanging out, or whatever, like, you know, and everyone's hanging out, you know, he wouldn't have been like that. It was because of the concentrated interest. It would be like if he was a girl, if you know what I mean. It would be like if some guy had constantly been trying to get me to go out with him and then I had to share a bedroom with him and get changed in front of him when I wasn't actually going out with him, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
That's the kind of level of uncomfortability it would be. You know, it was the concentrated interest in him as opposed to just, oh my God, I don't want to get changed around a gay kid, if you know what I mean. And I feel like that is not necessarily like how people viewed it originally, or at least obviously not how Bert, you know, all Bert heard was the really bad stuff. But yeah, I totally, you know, sympathize with Finn, and I think it's a really predatory and pressuring situation. And I just, it does suck. And he obviously does take a lot from that smackdown from Bert, you know, but honestly, you know, you know, as we've said, sort of the slur aside, Kurt is so in the wrong, and I don't know if he's learnt anything. Like, all he learns is that, you know, his dad yelled at Finn, and then Finn dressed up as Lady Gaga and saved him. Like, what now, if you know what I mean?
And Natalie, to your point of, like, having to change in front of someone that likes you, see, the thing is, that's a much bigger deal than, like, you were saying, for instance, if this was, like, Blaine or something. Because I mean, the best way I can kind of equate this to in my own life is a typical locker room where I won't even put myself into this situation because it makes it a little bit less awkward, but a gay guy in a man's locker room is not an awkward thing because it's not meant to be like a romantic stalkerish thing that maybe, yes, you see something you like, but it's not, I don't know, if you have common decency, you're not going to be like staring at the person. And I mean, it's not more of a sexuality thing that there are boy and girl locker rooms. It's more of a old-fashioned, like, there are only two genders kind of deal, and that's pretty much all it is. So it's like, it just feels really sad that, I don't know if I want to go as far as saying that this is, like, it's getting to the point of sexual harassment of Kurt via Finn, you know, from how he was saying he doesn't feel comfortable getting changed around him from the way he stares at him. But it's definitely reaching a boiling point where it's like that's just not treating Finn like he's anything but a piece of meat. It's like, okay, whatever. I don't care about your feelings. I just want to see you naked, whatever. Fine. And that's really just it's creepy to all the extents that we've discussed about in depth, and it always gets me really heated whenever I think back to this moment. I think legitimately, as we're all coming up with, because it's just, you're right, Natalie, it's a mixed moment. It's the slur that breaks all of Finn's, like, mojo. But I do have to say, there was a kind of funny moment where Bert is talking, you know, to Finn and saying, or yelling rather, about what about that nice girl Becky? You wouldn't call her the R word, would you? And I said, no, Becky's not a nice girl. You guys all know that. Oh wait, this is way too early to show.
Becky a nice girl? Oh no.
I know. I was like, slur aside. No, we're not talking about that. We're talking about her personality. She's a horrible person.
My sister thought that, like, at that part when he was talking about he said, would you call the girl the retard? My sister thought she meant Brittany. He meant Brittany.
Oh, no.
Jesus Christ. That's so awkward. I think I've heard someone say that before, but yeah, that's so awkward.
Yeah.
Anyway.
One more thing I wanted to bring up was that,
yes,
in hindsight, I didn't think this the first time through, but in hindsight, with all of these stories that Kurt has had since this point, this is the start of a pattern where he acts really terribly, really horribly, and then has something happen to him that makes him a victim all of a sudden.
Yeah, and that he gets completely to play the victim card. Yeah, yeah.
So, like, I'm thinking about, he gets, you know, bullied in season two. When he moves to New York, he's a horrible boyfriend to Blaine, and then Blaine cheats, so all of Kurt's mistakes are swept under the rug, that kind of thing, you know? He doesn't get called on his crap, essentially, because he gets to be victimized. And this is really the first instance of it.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate, because Kurt is terrible, 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 terrible. Then someone gets something, someone else, because of all Kurt's terribleness, ends up doing something that is objectively on paper worse than any, as a one incident, worse than any of Kurt's one incidences.
But his build up.
His build up, and he gets to run around, you know, screaming, oh my God, these people did this thing to me. You know, I'm not saying that the bullying was, like, his fault or anything.
No,
but,
of course not.
You know, but the thing, like, Blaine and on all of the other, you know, there have been many, many times where he's just been terrible to a degree where, you know, as soon as someone does something that's more quantifiably terrible, you know, he gets to be the victim, and it is pretty consistent, yeah. Kurt. And it would
Natalie,
be fantastically...
Go ahead, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it would be really... I would applaud them if that was, like, a thing that they were doing on purpose, if you know what I mean, that they ended up having a character trait, you know, that was done like that on purpose and that was going to have an end result. But I don't think that I think that they just think Kurt is a victim and that all his behavior is, like, I don't know, some form of acceptable, if you know what I mean. I've got a feeling that all of the things that we see about Kurt that we see as quite harsh. I mean, obviously someone had to look at the other side. Someone had to write those things for Finn to say to him, you know, slur aside. Someone has, you know, been able to pin down, you know, what the issues are, but then you have Bert sort of sweeping in and saying all those things, and it's like, okay, so you're just meant to take it, like, because he's gay, you're just meant to, like, take whatever he throws at you in order to not be homophobic? Is that how it works? Like, is that what you're trying to say? Like, because obviously Kurt, we didn't hear, you know, Bert talk to Kurt about the way that he was treating Finn as well, you know, like, I think that we do later on, but we didn't, you know, get to hear it at that moment. It's not really an equal sides mediation, if you know what I mean. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know if the show realizes that that's a pattern they're having with Kurt, or if they genuinely think Kurt is their, like, delicate little victim who,
you know, actually, you know, the world craps all over and that never does anything wrong. I don't really get it.
Natalie, I really don't like Kurt whatsoever, rewatching. Like, I'm done with Kurt and everything he stands for, everyone he talks to. It just always annoys me now because he is always doing wrong to people and abusing them verbally in some way that is not right, and then just playing a victim, which makes all that 10 times worse. Because there are characters like Santana who own up to their bitchiness. They know that they're a bitch. Kurt pretends he isn't, and he's just like, oh no, I would never do wrong to someone. And that he just torques me. I haven't gotten this heated on group chat in a while, but it's funny now that we just come up to this one moment that everything in retrospect that he does, even like later on, just really like pisses me off to the highest extent.
It'll be interesting to see in season 2, because I remember liking him a lot in season 2, and I've got a feeling it was in the period, to be completely horrible, I've got a feeling it was in the period where he was really, like, broken down. Like, he wasn't being, quote-unquote, himself because he was so traumatized from whatever happened with Kurovsky and moving to Dalton. It wasn't just like, oh my god, Dalton's so beautiful, Blaine, etc. The way Kurt acted during that time was a lot softer and a lot he was not being as, you know, horrible. And I think it was because he was depressed or because he was fucked up, basically, from what happened to him. And then when he recovered and kind of got himself back, you know, went back to McKinley, he started being horrible again. So, I don't, it's going to be interesting to watch season 2 and see that happen. So, I mean, what? It's true.
It's like, Kurt, we don't need poison like you and McKinley, just like Bert said to Finn.
Yeah, can only laugh because it's so depressing.
We'll have to see, but yeah, I remember him acting very...
He's really pissing me off.
Time. You know, during that time away from McKinley, I remember him acting very, very differently and being a lot, you know, softer and stuff and you know, allegedly that was not, you know, who he really is. That was him recovering from stuff that had happened to him, and then he gets his groove back when he goes back to McKinley and turns into a horrible person and makes Blaine transfer schools for absolutely no reason. But anyway, let's move on and finish off this episode quickly. We've been on this one for just on an hour now, so song list I'll very quickly read through. So we had the Funny Girl from Funny Girl, sung by Idina, and that's when Rachel realizes, you know, oh my god, it's my mom. Bad Romance, which is the girls' group doing Gaga. Shout It Out Loud, which was the boys' group doing Kiss, and then Puck, you know, and the boys doing the acoustic version of Beth, also by Kiss. Poker Face, which was Gaga, again, the acoustic arrangement that she did, Lady Gaga, and then they gave that to Shelby and Rachel as their sort of goodbye to each other, let's sing a duet for our feelings. So just quickly, did anyone have any, like, you know, aside from the plot that happened, which we've already talked about, any particular performance number thoughts, anyone that was a favourite or anything about that? So, Jack?
Yeah, I mean, they were all actually really good. I love Bad Romance. I mean, that's a pretty good song in general, but it was nice. But, I mean, we haven't really spoken about, and I mean, we probably won't because it might take a bit, but, I mean, the lyrics and the content of Poker Face was very awkward. At the start, I didn't really care because I was kind of just like, yeah, like, it's a fun, like, slow song.
Love nice, different arrangement. I love to sing to my mum about bluffing with my muffin. You know, yeah, awesome.
but based on like vocals in that, it's always funny to hear Shelby and Rachel sing because listening to Lea Michele, you're just like, Lea Michele's a girl, like an amazing singer, and like she's incredible. But then all of a sudden you hear Idina Menzel, and it's like, now sit down, Lea Michele. Idina's got this; she's awesome.
Yeah, Mitch, did you have a particular musical? Any thoughts from the musical numbers?
Yeah, I really liked Poker Face's harmonies. Thought they were really pretty. I agree that the lyrics are very awkward. And it's funny, too. I could have sworn, for some reason, that we went back and like talked about this episode. We probably did when we first started Glee Chat. Like, we talked about at least like this song. And I remember I was referencing back to, like, this was the one song that Rachel wanted to sing with her mom. Like, she's been waiting for it for so long. And it's even funnier in that context, because it's like, why? I know you seem to have some kind of, like, I don't even know, like, childlike mommy symptoms still when you're like, I'm here to show you my Beanie Baby costume because that's how I'm feeling right now. So maybe it's something to do with that insanely. I don't know. There's no context to, like, why this would have made sense. It's just like, well, we said we're doing Gaga this episode. This is a really cool arrangement, and they have really pretty voices. I don't care what the lyrics are. Let's do it.
Pretty much, yeah. It's a bit awkward.
Mm-hmm.
Caitlin, any particular musical numbers that you had, like, feelings / thoughts about aside from the plot?
I mean, I love Bad Romance. I listen to it frequently. And like I said, yeah. I love Santana. Yeah, her run in that is fabulous. I didn't like the arrangement of Poker Face at all. I thought it was it didn't sound good at all. So I was kind of cringing the whole time.
Mm. I love.
Do you reckon
Bad
they
Romance.
Actually wrote this?
Oh, sorry.
Do you reckon?
No, arrangement is Gaga. Arrangement is Gaga, not Glee. Oh. She did this with someone, or someone wrote it for her, and she performed it like this once. It wasn't a Glee work, that arrangement.
Oh, I was about to make a Baby Got Back joke.
No, not quite like that. It is a Gaga arrangement from something. I don't know what.
Oh, yeah, like a music award show where she's playing on the piano.
Something, yeah, something interesting. Bad Romance I really love as well. Like, I loved both the song when it came out and the Glee version when it came out. I think the Glee version, I remember at the time being like, this is the best thing they've ever done and stuff like that. And I really like not only Santana, I think all of the participants of the song, I think it was actually for a group number, like they had a really good like split like of different solo lines that really suited the voices and stuff like that. And I think it worked really well. And I remember them, I didn't see their tour, but the first tour, like the not the big one they did, like that they made the movie of, the first season tour, that which was really small, they were doing that. And I remember seeing videos of online being like, oh my God, it's so cool that they can do that live. And anyway, I was a big fan of Bad Romance as well. Very quickly, favorite quotes from this episode, if everyone's got one. Jack, do you want to go ahead?
Yep. So mine was when Tina was in the office, and Natalie, you stole my second favorite one. This is my first favorite. She goes, so Tina's talking about how she doesn't like to watch Twilight, and the reason is, quote, my mum says that she thinks Kristen Stewart is kind of a bitch. And it was just, it's not like that I necessarily think that. It's just the delivery of that line and the like comedic timing was just perfect. It was hilarious.
Yeah, that being said, yeah, from what he said that I stole, mine was like just him whispering, Tina whispering to Will about Figgins, I think he thinks vampires are real. Because, yeah, this Tina plot is just, it's just the best. But anyway, Caitlin, what was yours?
So for all that hating on Kurt, mine was like Kurt and Brittany when they're talking about.
Well, he does have good lines. Yeah. But, you know.
When they're talking about Gaga and Kurt's like, she's boundary pushing, the most theatrical performer of our generation, and she changes her look faster than Britt changes sexual partners. And Brittany just goes, it's true.
Lol. And Mitch, yours was also like a toss up, but I assumed someone else would put this one, so I didn't. But yeah, yours was.
Yeah, that was my own Russian roulette with a gun because I was like, someone else better not take mine. Yeah. mine was when Rachel's getting ready to sing Poker Face and bluff with her muffin to Shelby, and she wants to start the song, so she just calls out Brad, and then she turns to Shelby and says, "He's just always around."
So good. And yeah,
I love when Brad just comes back at them and is just like, guys, screw you.
Yeah, I want a whole, if we're going back to McKinley for season 6, which presumably we are, and Brad has to operate, you know, the piano under Rachel, the Glee Club teacher, I want him to like have an episode from his perspective, basically.
Or even just like one of those hallway walkthroughs like Becky has gotten.
Oh, please. If Becky can get a walkthrough, a monologue, so can Brad. Just the favorite moments as well, like, you know, that maybe not a quote, but moments run through very quickly. Jack, what was yours?
So my favorite moment was when after Will announces that they're going to be doing Gaga, and Rachel is just like in her head, she's like, pens, and then just goes in her office. It was really funny. Yeah. But the whole scene was really fun. And another one is when this episode was actually quite funny, like the comedic timing again in like, I think in the next choir room scene when Rachel's got her terrible, like, beanie doll dress on, and then they're all just talking, and then Kurt goes, and we have a jumper, and it's just
so
funny.
Oh my god, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, Caitlin, what was yours?
So I too love the Tina vampire goth plotline. So when she confronts Figgins in the hallway, yeah. It's like, my dad is king of the Asian vampires.
so good. Funny. Yeah. That definitely would have been mine as well, honestly. I'm going to say the other one that I just sort of remember that I laughed at again was, it's sort of a quote as well, but was when they were kind of talking about Gaga and Puck was like, what is this dude, like, what is this, like, situation with this Gaga dude? Doesn't he just dress up in a bunch of weird outfits like Bowie? And like I'm like, Bowie. Okay, Puck, like, I'm like, cool, all right, Puck. And it kind of just makes me think that, like, when Finn goes to tell Will about you know, none of the guys want to do Gaga. Puck totally would have done Lady Gaga. He wouldn't have cared when he found out it was a woman, if you know what I mean. Like, the line before the quote that Caitlin picked, you know, that Kurt responds to. You know, Puck said before he could wear a dress to school and make it cool. I think, you know, if it's like Bowie, Puck could have rocked it. Like, and I just like that image of Puck actually participating in you know, Lady Gaga. But, Mitch, what was your moment? Yeah, don't even. I don't want to talk about it. R.I.P. to all of the amazing Bowie moments this show could have pulled off if it had been actually good at things. But, yeah, they haven't done much Bowie, and I'm kind of glad for it because they may have done, like, kids Bowie, but it could have been brilliant. Anyway, Mitch, what was your moment?
Yeah, mine's when during Shout It Out Loud, Puck does the kiss tongue, and I was shocked at how long his tongue was. It was kind of like a big deal for me. I was like, he really did that really well. I'm impressed.
Yeah, I loved, again, with Puck, I loved when they were sort of describing their kiss costumes at the end, and he was like, oh, yeah, like, you know, Ace Frehley or whoever makeup he had, I can't remember he was Paul Stanley. He was like, he was the star child. He was like, doesn't explain my whore lips, though. And it's like, you know, all kissy with his beautiful red lips. Like, he don't care about wearing beautiful red lipstick and stuff. He should have joined Gaga. Anyway.
He should have.
Okay. The second episode that we watched was Journey to Regionals. Very quickly, here's what you missed on Glee. The episode between theatricality and this was Funk, which was quite a bad episode.
No, it's great.
It's not. Anyway, in that episode, Jesse goes back to Vocal Adrenaline. Vocal Adrenaline start bullying New Directions. Jesse ends up, like, getting rid of Rachel. Like, you know, Rachel's like, why are you doing this to me? And he ends up, like, sort of scaring her off by throwing eggs at her, which is total character assassination because Jesse is an idiot, but he's darling as well. So, yeah, he's not actually a bully. So I hated that. There's a gross, like, Sue and Will plot where Sue, for some reason, decides she gets a crush on Will and then he pretends to seduce her in order to hurt her, which is, like, whatever, weird, really screwed up. And it's also the start of the Quinn and Mercedes friendship in which Quinn moves in with Mercedes and they become best friends for two episodes and we never hear about it again. R.I.P. Quinn-Sadies.
Why isn't that the ship? Why is the Quinn-Rachel ship so much bigger than Quinn-Mercedes?
I don't know about shipping, but I would have loved Quinn and Mercedes to be actual best friends for the rest of, like, of, you know, ever. Like, I think that could have been really good. Anyway, first thing we find out is that Sue is a judge at regionals. And I'm just going to ask all of you, why? Why is this a thing? Why is this a thing? Anyone?
I don't know.
Why is what a thing? What was that?
Why Sue a judge? It just feels like they just had to throw one more cog in the wrench because in the machine because they were just doing too well. The New Directions seemed to have a pretty good shot at what was going on, and they had a really good set. Actually, I thought it was excellent. So it's a weird Deus Ex Machina happens with the whole Sue voting for them thing. I don't understand anything that was going on with that voting or the judges. It was a bunch of weirdness. So I guess to add Sue into that weirdness wasn't so weird to me. And to bring Olivia Newton-John back overall is just, and I don't know why. Why did Sue hate her? I don't remember from Physicality or whatever that episode might have been.
It's because Olivia Newton-John like took all of the winnings, all of the money they made from remaking the physical video.
Oh.
And she didn't get as like really anything.
Weird.
It's legit.
What, the physical video?
Yeah, I'm just joking.
No, it's so weird. Like, that whole Olivia Newton-John, Josh Groban, etc. It's so weird. Anyway, so, yeah, later in the episode, guest celebrity judges are, you know, a couple of people who have appeared in the show before, Josh Groban and Olivia Newton-John, and the other one is Rod Remington, who was Sue's, you know, news channel anchor person who she was having a thing with. But the first thing we sort of see is that, you know, the Glee Club has a meeting at Will's house where they're all just basically sitting around crying about how they're going to lose, and, you know, how much they all loved Glee Club and how it's going to be over, which I find creepy and weird. I would never go to a teacher's house. We've had this debate many times. I don't know. Maybe some places are like that. I think it's weird. This is the bit that, Caitlin, you were mentioning before, like Quinn is staring out the window thinking about basically the night Beth was conceived, you know, when her and Puck slept together. So, yeah, you clearly had some thoughts colouring the story there. Did you want to kind of talk about that quickly?
Yeah, they were both clearly in control, even though Quinn's like, you got me drunk on wine cooler. She seemed pretty with it the whole time.
Yeah.
And I don't know, they were both just really kind of gross and awful, like, about Finn and everything. So I was really, like, disappointed
mad at them.
And really uncomfortable with everything. And I just sort of lost a lot of sympathy at that point for both of them.
Yeah, I mean, that scene's been quite controversial because, you know, you're saying on one side, like, they're both really in control. You know, she tried to say, you got me drunk and did this. And I agree. I think from that scene that they were both the same level, whatever was going on, they were at the same level of whatever. And then, you know, and that it wasn't really fair for Finn to be like, Quinn to be like, you got me drunk on whatever, like, and place that blame directly on Puck. But then other people have been a bit like, about, you know, her being like, I don't want to do this. And him being like, shh, have another wine cooler, which was written pretty dodgily for something that they ended up wanting you to believe in the love of, basically. This show wants you to believe that Quinn and Puck are MFEO, that they are right for each other, that they're what they have is sort of bigger and more important than, like, high school relationships and stuff like that. That's what the show wants you to believe. They probably shouldn't have put him being like, have another wine cooler when she's like, I don't want to sleep with you. Maybe not.
I've never heard the abbreviation that you brought up, MFEO.
What, MFEO? Made for each other.
Meant for
each
other. I usually use OTP.
That's different. That's a shipping thing. MFEO is like world life. It's not
like a normal life saying.
Yeah, kind of. Anyway, maybe not.
Well, Jack wouldn't know about that because he didn't know what I was talking about when I said SOL yesterday.
I don't know what SOL is.
Yeah,
shit weird. Out of luck.
Exactly.
No. I've never heard that.
No one's ever. I heard.
Neither have I.
I've heard of that.
Right? Okay, so maybe it's an American thing.
Maybe it's American. Anyway, but yeah, Quinn and Puck, I mean, it is. They were both being quite terrible. And, you know, him being like, oh, you know, I slept with Brittany and Santana. And, you know, her being, how did they get into this situation? Like, how? Like, it's not just, you know, she... You know, he came over to her house. You know, she clearly invited him there. I would like to have known, you know, I would have liked to see like a prequel season of Glee where the cliques were not yet, you know, in the Glee Club.
Oh,
and
my
like,
God.
You know, and see what the dynamic between, you know, if they were all sitting around at lunch, you know, football players, cheerleaders, etc., like what the Quinn and Puck dynamic is, like how they got to that point.
What about those books? Weren't there books that went before?
Yeah, I have not read them.
I don't know if they're canon, so I don't know if that counts.
No, I don't think so. Anyway, yeah, Quinn and Puck, they clearly had what? Yeah, the book.
It was just like they were written very young adult from judging from at least the covers.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that they're not canon too, but I don't know. Like, how do you decide in general what's canon in a fandom? Is it just like if it's acknowledged later on in the series or?
I think so, yeah.
But I definitely do think that that's before Glee Club starts. Well, at least one of them was. I really want to just like go on Wikipedia and check out one of the plots now and try and see if there's more about how they first
not
came
now.
Together. Or... No, yeah.
But yeah, no, I don't know. They were both, you know, quite terrible, Quinn and Puck, in what they were doing, obviously. I just want to know how they got there, basically. I want to know because I do
I do like them eventually together, and I like that, like, again, it's all of these teens that have all these feelings, and they don't know what to do with them, and it's all a big mess, basically, and so that they all make terrible choices, which is, you know, quite accurate for teens in general. But, the point is that Puck and Quinn, or at least Puck for Quinn, and Quinn sort of ends up, you know, reciprocating, Puck about Quinn does seem to have, you know, an affection that is not just, you know, high school dating, if you know what I mean, and that, you know, yeah. And that does seem real. He just makes some terrible choices about it. And I really would have liked to see how they got to that point. But, yeah, I mean, Jack, did you have any sort of thoughts about that flashback about them getting together?
I didn't really think about it as deep as you guys are describing, but it does make a lot of sense. Like, I don't know. I mean, even and just watching it, rewatching it, I'm not saying that she wasn't drunk, but she did not seem that drunk or, like, drunk enough to not be to make a mistake like that. Like, she seemed very capable of making a decision, which does raise questions on, like, at this point of the show, like, how she does feel towards Puck, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Not saying that she loves him so much and she wants to have a baby with him. She might have just been, like, if she really did not like him, she wouldn't be doing what she did. So
it was not, let's call a spade a spade, it weren't a rape. It was not a rape by any
stretch. No, I don't think so at all. No.
Which
no,
some absolutely. people have tried to claim because they're like, oh, he got her drunk, etc. And I don't think that.
Weren't they both drunk? If well, that counts anything against this argument, I don't know.
Anyway, I don't want to go too deeply into that because that way lies amazing drama. But she definitely didn't want to feel responsible. Which is, I mean, fair, you know, sort of fair enough emotion that happens to people. But, yeah, it was, you know, it's, you know, yes, it sucks that she got pregnant, but, yes, she did choose to have sex with him. And, you know, clearly because, yeah, you know, it looked like she needed some comforting and it seemed, you know, he says this isn't just another hookup for me, and I don't know if he says that to all the girls, but I, you know, personally believe or choose to believe that that was relatively true and, you know, he did make some bad choices, but this was his, like, you know, he possibly shouldn't have done it or definitely shouldn't have done it. But for him, it was this moment of, oh my God, this is happening. This is the girl I actually care about. And this is actually happening. And because he's him, he still screwed it up. But I do feel like he was being relatively genuine and he was sort of doing, for lack of this sounding terrible, sort of doing what it took or kind of following her lead for, you know, whatever she was, you know, doing to get, you know, his chance with her, basically, or to get what he wanted. But anyway, that was only a small moment, you know, just to so we know, yeah, this is how the baby got conceived. Because guess what? Later in the episode, the baby's going to be born. How about the actual, like, sob story of everyone crying about the Glee Club ending? Like, I'm sorry, but Will driving his car, like, and, like, pulling over to cry because Don't Stop Believing comes on the radio in this, like, you know, terrible, like, industrial small town, like, side road.
I have an important question about that production-wise. Do you think that was an actual car driving down an actual road? Because to me, that was the most realistic driving I've seen in a car on a TV show in a long while.
I kind of agree with you. I don't know the answer to that, but I will agree with you in terms of, like, it. I mean, you know, things like sitcoms, like 20-minute sitcoms, like, you know, Big Bang Theory, How I Met Your Mother, they're purposely, like, their driving isn't meant to look realistic. Like, it's green screen and it's meant to be. You know, stuff that's technically a drama, like a longer drama, like a 40-minute something that has a bit more production value to it, like a multi-camera show. A single camera show as opposed to like a sitcom that's
I'm
all
thinking
done
like
in
Vampire
like
Diaries. They drive a lot in that show. It doesn't look as realistic still, though.
I've never seen that. I don't think the budget for Vampire Diaries is very high, to be honest.
they have a lot of CGI.
I don't know how they did that scene, but it did look like some good driving. Mm-hmm. However, him pulling over to cry in the like laneway because of Don't Stop Believing.
No! What if like a big semi didn't see it?
My God, all of our problems could have been solved.
Oh, I love that we all, like, mentally completed that thought.
Anyway, so basically,
this show loves car crying.
Yeah, for real. Well, I think it was kind of meant to tie into the, like, the part. Like, I felt like a lot of the, like, kind of
you know, some of Will's, like, you know, the way they sort of shot stuff with Will and with Sue, I felt like it was kind of meant to mirror the pilot a bit, like that it was meant to tie into it a bit, like that it actually was done like that on purpose. But yes, they love crying in the car in general in this show. My favorite crying in the car was Kurt and Rachel together in the beginning of season, maybe four, might have been three
with Lindsay from Glee Project. Because the Gerber baby up shows them, and they're like, "We're never gonna get into theater."
That crying in the car, I was just like, I was like, "I need you guys. I don't care about sexuality. You guys are in love, and you need to just go and be like your best selves together forever." Not in a weird way. Not in a weird, you know, erasing homosexuality way. But they were just scene anyway, we'll get there, but it was just such an amazing bonding moment that I was just like, no one is better for you guys than each other. Oh, Kurt, remember liking Kurt? That was odd. Anyway, they go to regionals, basically. You know, they decide to go ahead to regionals. They kind of have this get it together moment, basically, where they you know, Rachel has a sort of, you know, Finn has this big, like, you know, I can't believe you're giving up to Rachel, and they go in and, you know, she kind of kisses him, and it's kind of obvious they're going to get back together. And then they go into Glee Club, and Schuster's all empowered by Journey, and he gives them a Journey set list, and they go to regionals, and they need to either win or place. So, like, win or come second out of three. I still think that there should be more than three teams at regionals to get to keep the club, like for the budget to be extended and for them to keep the club. So that is the main, you know, part of the first half of the episode that we have, you know, we have New Directions performance. We see that, I think they go second or something like that. Cause we hear that the first group is doing like a mashup of Olivia Newton-John and Josh Groban songs, because of course they are. And then, we have the set for New Directions. Like, we see the entire, performance. So three songs that they do, which is Faithfully, which is the Finn and Rachel duet, and then the mashup of Any Way You Want It and Love and Touch and Squeeze, and then their version of Don't Stop Believing. So, yeah, I mean, it just, I guess at this point in the episode slash plot, what did you guys think of the full regional set? I personally really love this one, but, you know, maybe people have different opinions. So, Jack, what was your thoughts on the regional set?
Oh, it was great. It's going to be one of my favorite competitions. I mean, the competitions for the most part, always deliver. Like, most of them do really, really well. And I really, really, really like the duet and then the mashup. And whenever Don't Stop Believing comes back, I always get a little choked up. And it was really nice to see that again on the show. And I really, really like seeing in this point of the show, like, them doing it, Don't Stop Believing at the end, how it wasn't just Finn and Rachel doing the lead. Like, he had Artie, he had Puck, he had Santana, he had Mercedes, Kurt. It was really, really good. I enjoyed them all doing it instead of just the two of them, because it really symbolizes, like, how far the club has come over the season. And, yeah, it was fantastic. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I love this entire set. Like, I love this version of Don't Stop. I love the mashup of Any Way You Want It. I think that's really, like, dynamic and cool. And I love the duet of Faithfully. Like, it's one of my favorite things that they have sung together, like Finn and Rachel. And I really, really, really love that. But, Caitlin, yeah, do you like it, hate it for this regional set?
I like it. I think they sound great and they look like they're having a blast. And something I've really liked about the early performances is just the unprofessional choreography in their numbers. Yeah. Like, I love it.
Yeah, I was kind of watching that as well, like some of the bits where they're all kind of clicking and singing along. And I'm like, they clearly haven't been told, do it on the beat. Everyone's just like, you know, move your arms a bit. Like, do what feels natural, if you know what I mean. Like, they haven't been, they're not, like, doing actual choreography for a lot of it. So, yeah.
They just look cute. They're having fun on stage.
Mitch, what about this set for you?
Well, I'm very emotional about Faithfully, actually, and funny because I think like a week ago I was sitting with some friends at a sub shop and Faithfully, the original, came on, and I got so emotional and couldn't pin on why I was, and then I just thought for a minute and I was like, oh, okay, that's why. And then just seeing this, like, I like almost applauded at my TV. I was like, yes, that was great. It's everything like I remembered it. It was just so good. And that is just the, like, one epitome Finchel song to me. It is nothing else. Nothing else beats the lyrics, and like, just their voices are just so meant for those vocal parts. It is just such an awesome medley. And of course the choreography when like Rachel comes up during like her faithfully, like those moments, they give me the hardest chills. If that's a good way to say that. Like that moment just like it literally chills me to my core, because to me it's just like Rachel is talking about how she's just so faithful to like this glee club, to Finn, to like her character, to like getting all the way to Broadway, and it's just like her large like big belting moment, and it's such a good like, you know, rising action moment to like her climax of as a character in season one, where she's just like there and she's like, I know who I am and we're gonna freaking win this regionals. That is just, it's so many feels.
And how about, how about the situation between Finn and Rachel, I suppose? Like, he, you know, she kind of, I really love this because, you know, throughout the whole season, or at least the first half, you know, she was pushing him. She was like, I am the one that understands you. And, I mean, it's true, but she was really, you know, pressuring him and all of that kind of stuff, and really kind of sort of pinning, you know, everything onto herself for him. And then we have, you know, this point where he kind of comes up to her earlier in the episode and is like, you are better than this. You're gonna make it so everyone wins. You know, you have all these, you know, yes, your bad qualities are annoying, but they also help us and we need you. And then she sort of kisses him and he kind of accepts that. And then in this, she's still not like pushing him to be like, what are we? Are you my boyfriend? What's going on? What's going on? She kind of just is like, we're doing this, you know, break a leg. They're kind of very cuddly. And then he's just like, I love you, which I guess for the first time. And I really, you know, like this. I thought this was very, very nice and good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, and I think that, again, like, Finchel, over time, you know, people get caught up in, you know, different ships, you know, up until the end of, you know, season four. But yeah, like looking back, like, you know, and everyone was also caught up in, you know, their little side characters and stuff. This was really, really nice. Like, you know, even if at the time, you know, you or various people were ignoring it or shipping other things in fandom or all sorts of things. And I really, really loved this personally, but yeah. Anyone else have any Finchel feels at this point?
Well, at this point, like, I think the reason why he went out to her and, you know, he's like, I love you, is because she's finally, like, she's actually kind of calmed down now, and I think that's
what
he was
kind of watching.
Yeah. Like, when she's all been crazy in his face, like, yeah, you're not going to start showing your feelings when somebody's so, like, forward onto you. But now that she's just calmed down, yeah, like you said, they're doing their thing. And, yeah, that's what's happened. And Finchel is still my number one ship, like, ever. So,
really?
I really like seeing this again. Yeah, I've said that before. Yeah, Finchel is my favorite.
Mitch, how about you?
Well, I think I expressed them very strongly when I was talking about Faithfully, and
that's true.
But I don't know how to put this in a way that's not going to probably hurt a lot of people's feelings about this song, but I did not like Don't Stop Believing the reprise this time, or the time that Rachel sings it during her audition, or like it just lost its effect past the first time, and I wish that it was kind of just like, it's a known thing that this song is a big thing in the fandom, but they don't need to acknowledge it, you know? That would have been a better thing for me. But I do like the moments that Finn and Rachel have during the song. I think that they have more chemistry in this version of Don't Stop than they did in the first version of Don't Stop, because not the actors, but the characters have more to work off of at this point and are more connected. So it was great to see, I'm thinking of Touch and Feel and Squeeze, and when that lyric when Rachel's kind of like putting her hands on Finn and stuff, like that stuff was sexy, and I don't feel that I see too much of that in Finchel in musical numbers. They don't have too much like sexy choreography, so that moment was really cool, and their chemistry in Don't Stop was really awesome also.
I don't know about chemistry, like I mean I think that they always do, but yes, I feel like that this is a really yeah, if you sort of mirror them back to back, if you know what I mean, I think that it is, they're very much like, it's like they've kind of acknowledged that, you know, just kind of acknowledge where they are with each other and a lot more comfortability in a really sweet way. And yeah, the sexy choreography in anything, you know, in anything, what it, I always mix up the title of this, you know, the love and touch and squeeze and mash up, etc. where all the girls are, you know, feeling up the boys from behind and stuff. Yeah. It was a bit like, oh, okay.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. I was just like, look at Rachel. Like, at first I was thinking about it. I kind of just watched it and I was like, okay, whatever, no big deal. And then I thought about it and I was like, that was like prude little Rachel, who's like still very virginal, who just like held and touched and squeezed Finn on stage.
I mean, she can do anything in performance. She's very good at the whole like performing, like, you know, character, you know, whatever thing. That, you know, any way you want it, love and touch and squeeze, and objectively, like, just as a song and as a, like, you know, the audio and the performance, as opposed to it actually meaning anything, is, like, one of my favorite things Glee's done. I think it's so, like, cool and fast and good.
Well, you say that she's really good about getting into whatever character she does, but I say that the whole West Side Story, I need to have sex with Finn thing, was a big moment where she learned how to feel sexy on stage, how to feel in love on stage. So that's why I found this moment so shocking, because we had that development in, season 3, Jack, that, obviously she doesn't know how to, I suppose, be romantic, not exactly sexy, but and maybe those are different things, because West Side Story isn't like a sexy show. It's a romantic show, and this was a very sexy song. So maybe she knows how to be sexy, but she doesn't know how to be romantic, and that's what she needed to learn from having her first time with Finn. I don't know.
Oh, Jesus. We're not there yet. Let's not talk about the first time. Caitlin, do you have any Finn and Rachel thoughts, like, at this point in the show?
I don't have any deep thoughts, but Rachel's smile right before she goes on for Faithfully after Finn says he loves her is just the sweetest little thing. I love it.
Yeah, she's just a lot like, you know, there's nothing like nothing put on about it, you know, nothing put on about her, if you know what I mean. It's very, not innocent, but it's like, I don't know, it's like her best self, and it's nice. Yeah, so basically they perform, and then, I mean, we're going to have a little bit of an interlude where they run to the hospital because, you know, they come off stage and Quinn's mother is there and she's all like, oh, my God, Quinn, you can be my child again. And Quinn's waters break and she has to go to the hospital while Vocal Adrenaline performs. But back at regionals, you know, we have the judges' room with Sue basically judging the, you know, the groups that have performed. So, and there's a bit of a back and forth about, you know, if New Directions are good or bad, or who's good and who's bad. And they kind of, you know, Sue kind of finds herself like defending, you know, the stuff that other people are criticizing, like Olivia Newton-John and stuff like that is, you know, criticizing, oh, they're, you know, not very good. Are they poor? Are they whatever? And Sue finds herself, you know, defending the fact that, you know, some people don't have as many opportunities as other and all of that kind of thing, which I thought was kind of nice. I mean, it's just a frustrating moment for me in that, like, you know, Sue flip-flops on, you know, her opinions so often, like, if you know what I mean, that, you know, it takes sort of, you know, an enemy of my enemy is my friend situation for her to be sticking up for New Directions. But, you know, the fact that they're, you know, criticizing the school and the people's circumstances and talent seems to actually rub Sue the wrong way, which was interesting to me. But, yeah, anyone sort of enjoy / hate / have any opinions at all about the judging session? Jack, how about you?
I know a lot of people get hung up about how people want, like, professional, like, proper judges in there. So, like, when they win the competition, it's, like, it's valid and it's justified and stuff. But that would be great just to have maybe one serious judge. But I do really enjoy seeing the back and forth, and especially in this one. And I really, 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 really like Sue's turnaround and how she's just realizing that, like, they are just kids. They're doing their best. And, like, here's other people actually doing what she's doing, and it's actually not cool. So I do like this part. It's really good.
Mm. Mitch, how about you?
Well, I wanted to concentrate, too, unless you had plans to, on the whole Bohemian Rhapsody song itself.
Wait, we will. I just want to talk about the judges' room before we go to the entire thing.
Okay, just want to make sure we didn't, like, miss that all the way. It's, as I was saying before, it's really weird, and I was wondering, too, how they were actually deciding the winner. I'm assuming, if only Roxanne was on Glee Chat right now, I'm assuming that it's, like, a point system, like, with Sue putting, you know, New Directions in the first place or whatever, like, that's a lot of just, like, 5 points. And in the end, everyone's points are tallied up, and then whoever has the most points is first and second and third, etc., if that makes the most sense to everyone else. Is that what you guys thought happens, too?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Who can tell?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think Glee really cares. I don't think they care to tell us in the end. Yeah, and I was, it's funny, too, because I was half expecting this to be the one where Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan are in, because they're talking about celebrities, and I'm like, ugh, great, I just see them on screen, but I assume that's not this season.
No, not yet.
No, Jack, which one is that?
Regionals next year, maybe? Well,
Paris Hilton is never a judge, but it's... No, it's national...
No, Paris Hilton. Paris Hilton. Lohan
is a judge. Oh, yeah. Paris Hilton, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Not Paris Hilton.
What one is it, though? Jack? What season? Next season, I think? Well, anyways, encyclopedia is broken. We'll get back to him later.
Season 3, Nationals.
Season 3, Nationals. Okay. Sorry, Nelly, go on.
Yeah. No, that's okay. I mean... Caitlin, I don't know if you have any thoughts about this judging situation, but I personally get constantly annoyed at Sue, you know, having sort of logical opinions and then changing them. Do you have any sort of thoughts on Sue's position in this?
I'm okay with this because I was really, like, stuck on Sue's face during the whole thing because you can kind of see her expression getting, like, she's really into it and then she starts getting, like, confused and then really taken aback by what's being said, and then she's almost surprised that she is defending, so you can really see, like, her emotions about, like, her flip-flop and position on her face. So it kind of worked for me.
Yeah, I like it. Like, I like seeing it watch that happen to her. Not that, you know, I'm glad that she had this opinion change. I just get annoyed that, like, and obviously it goes on to her then helping the Glee Club get another year to show off. But, like, I don't know, I just, it would be nice. I would be interested if, you know, someone, you know, not Will, because, you know, I don't like him getting a one-up over anyone, but if someone like Emma or something, like, just followed Sue around with, like, a video camera and, like, made a montage of all of the bits that she, you know, had one opinion and then showed them to her or something like that, because... You know, it just, to me, I mean, from the perspective of the show, often looks like they really don't know what to do with her. I mean, she is obviously quite insane, so maybe it just works for her to just, you know, have whatever emotion that suits the current antagonist plot. But I don't know. Be interesting to see what she goes in season 6, if she's still the principal or whatever. So, yeah. Obviously, before they make the decision about the final, judgment of the regionals, Quinn gives birth, basically, while, and it's interspersed with Vocal Adrenaline, you know, featuring Jesse St. James performing Bohemian Rhapsody. And I sort of can't believe that this happened. Like, I still watch it and I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, this is what's happening. And then I remember just sort of objectively, like, seeing some reviews of, like, you know, Glee, or, you know, just being like, random people, being like, is it true that in the season finale, a girl gives birth, like, cut in between Bohemian Rhapsody? And I'm like, yeah, is that weird? Like, should that be weird? It's Glee. yes, Mitch, you wanted to,
It's an epic pregnancy.
What, you know, you wanted to make sure we didn't miss over this scene. Like, what did you think the Bohemian Rhapsody performance birth scene?
Once again, if Roxanne was on, she would be going wild about how accurate, I think at least, this was stage-wise. Because for once ever in Glee season 1, all that we've seen so far, we have an actual, like, you know... theatrical performance on stage, not just, like, jumping around, dancing and singing a song. It's like they really had really like show choir-y moves, and it was excellent. It was great, and it was intense. There were moments. There were Mamma Mia, Let Me Go, VSFO, and then they're doing like flips with the girls, and they're like. The guys, I think, are picking up a girl, and they're flipping her fully just for her to be picked up again from a guy behind her. So she's essentially being forced into, like, backflips by people picking them up. And it was just, it was, like, so cool. I can't even remember seeing such cool choreography in Glee other than that. That was, like, my top choreographed song when I watched it, and it still is. I'm glad that it's held up after all of these years. Barring all the Quinn stuff, that's I think they're very separate points, but very legitimate points.
Yeah, I mean, the performance, I think, was, you know, amazing. And yeah. I know some people have hated the way that Jonathan Groff sung that song. I think it's fine for Glee, but I don't know, some people just don't. So people are very sensitive about Freddie Mercury, and they're very sensitive about people doing Glee covers.
Yeah, that's why.
And like, they're very Queen, they're very sensitive about people doing Queen covers, like anything except the original. Queen is a band that people are very sensitive about covering. But, and I'll ask Jack about that in a moment because I know he has a lot of thoughts there. But what people seem to find ridiculous is not the Bo Rap performance, it's the fact that they cut it interspersed with this birth scene and, like, you know, they tried to kind of make it parallel or something like that. And, like, I don't know. It is like, I didn't ever think it was that ridiculous because it's Glee. I can kind of understand from the outside.
This is Glee. I mean, worse has happened. Like, Will raps. That's enough to just say.
Oh, my God.
Stop. Collaborate and listen.
No. Oh. Caitlin, what do you think of the Queen Bohemian Rhapsody birth scene?
I mean, Jonathan Groff can be on my TV singing all day long, as far as I'm concerned, so always fabulous, and he's incredible, and I don't know, it doesn't seem weird to me that it was interspersed,
like,
but
it doesn't seem that weird to me, and I know people think it's so weird, and it's not that weird, I don't know.
But when I was watching, I was going, they would never do this in Glee today, either.
No,
it just seemed like so in that specific season and how they approached Glee. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, there were some moments, though. The Mamma Mia, Mommy moments.
Yeah.
And then
I didn't love that they were trying to make, like, Quinn's screams match up with that was the one.
Let
thing.
Me go! Oh, that was bad.
If it had just been the song interspersed with the birth scene, I wouldn't have found that weird. What I found weird was the trying to matching up the, like, her, what she was crying out. That they could have done without.
No, in general, I didn't find it. Yeah, it was not good. It just didn't fit well because it didn't sound like something natural that someone would say. Except for it was really cute, though, when Quinn, outside of Bohemian Rhapsody, just starts going, "You suck, you suck, you suck, you suck, you suck."
I assume that was at Puck, and I love that.
That's the part that's the worst.
Oh, you thought that was not good, Jack?
No, I think that was the part that made it serious. That was the part
where,
you know, everything else, I'm kind of like, yeah, this is all right.
No, I thought that I thought it was better. I thought that that was the part that was the most, like, kind of realistic. I didn't think they were trying to make that match up with the song as opposed to her being like, "Let me go!" I was like, no, that
Let me go was just stupid.
I thought her just screaming and, like, if it had been interspersed with, like, you know, her just screaming and stuff, and I think that that was cute. But anyway, yes, I thought Jesse was amazing in the performance, honestly. I really did, and I love him.
Oh, there's one moment, too, that you just reminded me of, just by mentioning his name, that Jesse's, I don't remember the lyrics, he's singing center stage, and he has two girls kind of flipping their hair back and forth on him, and he just looks like a total babe. Like, he's just rocking it. Like,
he's a babe. What are you talking about?
It's like hairography to the finest degree. It was so awesome, because he was just like, yeah.
He's amazing, and he's so complex, and I love him. Anyway.
I love how just badass he is through the whole song. He's just like, so you think you can stop me and spit in my eye, and he just screams it, you know?
Really good.
Yeah. It's not Freddie, I know, and that's okay. It's fine to have an artistic cover. It's an interpretation, guys, you know?
Yeah. I think people agree with that about, you know, most artists, they like cover songs. Yeah. Queen in particular, people are really sensitive about. But yeah, Jack, did you want to say things?
I mean, I really liked it. I mean, I do have, I mean, I honestly don't really mind that much when people cover Queen songs. Like, to be honest, like, I have the mindset where, like, I know a lot of people think, like, if there's a cover of a song, it ruins the song. It doesn't ruin the song. It's just a different take on the song. You still got the original there. It's not like the original has gone away. Sorry?
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah.
But you know what? There can be moments.
Yeah, but that's what. But I also do like how, like, Jesse. Like, I mean, it's not really meant to. He's not trying to be like Freddie Mercury as well. Like, he's not trying to be. And as a whole, as a performance, it's probably Glee's best, like, interpretation of a song to be like a show choir. So I really, really liked it. And I think that it's epic putting a pregnancy in Bohemian Rhapsody. I just think that's such a off the wall, out there idea that they actually did quite well. So I like it. I love this. It's so good.
Hmm.
But to the point about having a cover ruin the original, I can see that happening only when the cover over eclipses the original. And we can even put this in a Glee concept to say, like, some might say Don't Stop Believing's been ruined by Glee because no one knows the Journey version anymore. But I think that there are other ones, too, in pop culture, like the...
Valerie
or, like, Big Yellow Taxi, isn't it, that the Counting Crows cover... And I didn't even.
The Big Yellow Taxi, the Counting Crows cover is not bigger than the original.
Well, okay. Well, maybe that's just my own perspective. Okay. I didn't know.
Maybe something's bigger.
Or maybe it just becomes more known to a certain generation, right, or something like that. Like, right. And then people get offended that they don't know the original artist or something like that. Like, you know, like, I think that it's more like that, like that, you know, Johnny Cash covered a song by Nine Inch Nails because he liked all sorts of different genres of music, and he covered a few songs he covered a song by Depeche Mode, and a lot of people who, you know, didn't know anything about, you know, industrial rock music thought that Nine Inch Nails had done a cover of a Johnny Cash song, if you know what I mean, whereas it was the other way around. And yeah, people get a bit sensitive about covers.
And no one knows that Valerie...
That's what I meant. Yeah, Valerie is not an Amy Winehouse song. Valerie is made very famous by Amy Winehouse. It's by a band called The Zootons. And I remember that song coming out, and then the Amy Winehouse. And I like them both. But they're at least both sort of the same generation, whereas, you know, Counting Crows, Big Yellow Taxi, you know, Joni Mitchell, etc., is more distant. I think that with cover songs in general, you know, and it doesn't really apply to Glee because you watch Glee and you know that everything is a cover. I think people get bitchy and moany about covers and, you know, oh, that's not as good as that, is because they think that if someone knows a cover song first before they know the original, or if someone, you know, assumes that that is an original song, it kind of discredits the original song. They, you know, if you knew the... I don't know, if you knew someone's cover before you knew the original, then, you know, it's discrediting the original artist or something, or, you know, or it's like a generation gap thing, and I don't know, people are funny about it, but with Glee, at least, everyone knows it's a frickin' cover when they see it on Glee, unless it's one of their terrible original songs.
One final quick thing on our cover discussion is that I had the potential of thinking that this was... perhaps even a newer song when I watched this, because I'd like to say maybe a year or two before this episode of Glee aired, I thought when I first heard Bohemian Rhapsody on the radio as a kid that it was a newer song. I literally thought that was a song that came out in like 2005, 2006, whatever.
Sometimes I don't know how you grew up. I just don't understand it. I don't understand like what... like music, like was osmosis, like that you heard by osmosis when you were growing up and stuff.
Oh, like I always had like a lot of classic rock playing at like barbecues, and I would
Have you seen Wayne's World though? The movie Wayne's World. Okay, it's really like it's awesome. Most people of my generation like probably would have first heard it in Wayne's World because it's a massive scene in Wayne's World. But that's like a '90s movie, and you're like 12, so maybe you haven't seen it. Anyway,
back in that movie as well. It came back into like the public.
Yeah, it came back into like popularity from that movie. Yeah. But anyway, moving on from Wayne's World, it's not very important. The actual point is, yeah, at least when we watch Glee, everyone knows it's a cover, and they do a good job of mixing in from all sorts of genres. You know, from Broadway, current pop, you know, classic stuff that people didn't know before, and all of that kind of thing. I mean, Caitlin, when you started watching Glee, I don't know, like, because you said you didn't know Broadway very well. And also that you didn't, not really a radio, like current music. So did you start watching Glee for the music or like for a certain character or actor, or like how did you get into it if it wasn't sort of through the music scene part of it?
It was just because it had gotten so popular and I was curious, just like a cultural phenomenon thing.
Which part of the music do you end up liking the best, like in terms of like, you know, if they go one particular genre or like, you know, industry or another usually?
I like the poppy stuff for the most part.
Yeah. I was going to say, and you were obviously a big Warblers fan as well. Yeah.
Of course.
Which brought a whole different, like, you know, like the style of music in a whole different style of music into the show as well. Like no matter what they were covering, it was really different sound too.
And arguably into pop culture again, because acapella gained popularity not only from that, also from like Pentatonix on YouTube and Pitch Perfect, obviously too.
Mm. Yeah. It's definitely another sort of genre that came into it, which obviously we'll talk about in season two, but yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be fun actually.
So let's talk about the aftermath of Beth birth, basically. So Quinn's baby, she, you know, reunites with her mother, who, I mean, it seems a bit flaky, but whatever, I suppose she came through in the end. Puck is quite emotional about the whole situation, which I have lots of feelings about as usual. And then eventually, you know, Shelby basically adopts the baby. Like Rachel and Shelby have a bit of a conversation, you know, about Quinn having the baby, and then Shelby, you know, turns up at the hospital and they, you know, see the baby. She sees the baby with Quinn and Puck, and then she ends up adopting the baby, and I'm pretty sure the process doesn't quite work like that unless you arrange. I don't know, maybe the government is different in different places. I don't know if there's a way I don't know if there's a way to arrange personal adoption, if you know what I mean. Like, not just, oh, I'd like to adopt a baby today, but if Quinn is like, I've just had a baby, I would like to adopt it out to this woman, if
right,
you know what I mean.
I don't think
it was like a coincidence that she got Beth. I think she went to Puck and Quinn and was like, instead of putting your baby through the system,
well,
will you just let
me adopt
her?
Natalie, it's probably to the equivalent of like a surrogate baby, where it's to the effect of like, you're picking someone,
signing it up to this baby, you know, to,
because the hospital does not care and the government does not care that you're being paid to give away that baby, I assume.
Yeah,
it's your own thing past the fact of the parents were chosen specifically by someone and that's it. We can't control past that.
Yeah. So let's assume that, you know, that she didn't just say, I'm here to adopt a baby today, got any spares, and that, you know, Puck and Quinn organized. What? So Puck and Quinn organized her to adopt Beth specifically.
Oh, yeah, we just got one in new today.
I mean, my question for you is, do you think Rachel orchestrated this in any way? And I think I've asked this before, and I've got a feeling it gets answered down the line. Like, she didn't know, like, either they do confirm it or that they confirm it the other way. But at this point, given, you know, we don't see that entire conversation with Shelby and Rachel, and we don't see the entire conversation with, like, Shelby, Quinn and Puck. Do you think that Rachel was like, oh, yeah, I know, if my mum wants a baby, she could go and adopt Quinn and Puck's baby? Or do you think that it was, like, something that would, like, piss Rachel off, basically? Jack, do you have any sort of memory about what they say about this later down the line?
No, I don't think it was ever addressed, and I also don't think that that's necessarily what happened. I honestly just thought Shelby sort of came to the conclusion by herself. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'm sure it doesn't get answered. I think I would remember, but... Yeah, I never actually even thought about that, to be honest, if Rachel did, like, orchestrate it all. But, yeah, I still don't think that she did, even with that idea. I still think that, like, Shelby came into it herself.
And went, can I have a baby? And they said, okay, here's a new one.
Terry planning on doing? Wasn't she essentially going to just, like, keep the secret for Quinn and give her prenatal vitamins and stuff so that she can get the baby? That was her whole game plan.
Yeah,
that was like
the
payment
know.
For the baby. So that was a surrogate situation too. And
yeah.
At
least that's planned in advance. I don't know. Yeah. I'm assuming that Quinn and Puck had the baby signed over directly to Shelby. Not that it was like, oh, coincidence.
Well, she did show up. So there might have been some off screen stuff after the, that's your baby, I can tell stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wait, and Rachel leaves after that conversation. She says, you know, oh, they're, Shelby's like, where's your friends? And they're at the hospital. Quinn had her baby. And it's like, how is she? She said, she's fine. And she leaves.
Did Shelby even know Quinn? Didn't she just meet her this episode?
I don't know.
Like, hello, I want your baby now?
Maybe. I don't know. Caitlin, what do you think of Shelby actually adopting this baby, though, in general? Like, that being the ending of that plot?
I mean, it makes a lot of sense, and it's very convenient. Neat and tidy, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you want a baby? Here's one, wrapped in a bow. Have it. It's
interesting. And obviously, you know, sets up a lot for the future in terms of some things with the baby in the future, which all goes a bit weird, but...
Oh, it's complete and utter bullshit what happens with Beth and Quinn and Puck trying to do what they're doing. It's just, it's bullshit. It pisses me off. I really can't wait till we get to that part, too.
Yeah, well, it's all insane, but what can you do? But yeah, I mean, that's sort of the tidy ending for that situation. I mean, it's, you know, that happened, I suppose. It was a, you know, climactic ending to the, you know, main, well, one of the main plots of the season, I suppose, is, you know, obviously Quinn's pregnancy, and it had to end at some point. I don't know how I feel about Shelby adopting a baby in general and just being like, I would like a baby, you know, as we talked about, obviously she really wants one due to her circumstances, but just be like, I'd like a child. No, I don't want you, child. I want a new child. Thank you. And, you know, maybe child rearing is a beautiful thing for some people. But she was like, no, that one isn't good enough. It's too big. Get me a small one, if you know what I mean. It was really not that nice, I didn't find.
It's
but
like
anyway.
She didn't want like a 13-year-old dog. She wanted a brand new purebred puppy.
I feel like Shelby in general is a bit too erratic to be having a baby, but you know she does end up, you know, being good and stuff, I suppose. But I don't know.
That poor baby's gone through so much shit.
Especially it doesn't know like about later it.
On. Yeah,
I know, but still.
Protect Beth at all costs. No one tell her or any of the weird shit that happened, basically.
It might be a little bit of American Horror Story Season 1, how, like, there's the baby that that Connie Britton has. We're speaking of Freak Show, holy shit. Somebody talk to me about it on Twitter, please. I love it.
No.
Oh, that's me. Hello.
Make your call out to somebody. Somebody just... I want to talk about American Horror Story all the time, so if somebody wants to talk to me about it on Twitter, please send me a tweet.
It's so odd that that's a Ryan Murphy show, because I never watched Nip Tuck, but I assume it's probably more like that, but it's nothing like Glee. It doesn't have any of the same, like, jokes and, like, dialogue or anything.
No, it's totally different.
It's so weird. It's like, is he really just that dynamic, or is it just such a different production team that they're able to just shove him away from the Glee world into this horror world? I don't know. But it's impressive. It's definitely...
It's all done on the same, like, literal the same soundstage. He can go, like, from Glee in the morning to American Horror Story in the afternoon and, like, work on whichever. So maybe he's just that weird. I don't know.
American Crime Horror Story, or whatever that weird thing is.
I think he personally has a bit more of a personal hand in American Horror Story and less on Glee now. But yeah.
Well, the way he kind of shows up in the Glee Project Season 2 that we were recapping for a bit, he kind of just, like, shows up to the performances in every episode, and he just kind of seems like, what are these shitbags going to do today? Like,
nice! Real nice! Okay.
He really didn't seem too enthused by the fact that he was sitting there watching, like, these, you know, 20-somethings starving for his attention. He was like, ugh, I'm over this world.
Okay, just to finish up with this episode, the club gets ended. The Glee Club gets ended, basically, because they come third out of three, apparently. Which I found really weird, because they were, like, runners-up, and then they were, like, the winner, and it's like, oh, so you're third. Usually don't they go, like, third, and then winner, and second. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Point is, they come third, they don't place, you know, they don't come first or second. And so the Glee Club gets ended, you know, and Figgins, you know, has that, you know, conversation with Will, and then... you know, the club's ended, the room's all cleared out. They, you know, we come at the school, we sort of see Emma, like, screaming her head, like, really, like, fighting with Figgins. And I'm like, again, it reminded me of what we've mentioned a few times about how not passive Emma is. Like, she's a very quiet person and she's got her issues. But at least in this season, she's really determined and she's really not a passive person at all. And, you know, she's fighting for the, you know, Glee Club and... you know, getting really angry and all of that kind of stuff. And she comes out and Will, you know, not confronts her, but speaks to her about it. And I hate him so much. I hate him so much. But especially in this moment where he's all like, basically, you know, she's kind of like, oh, I was, you know, fighting for the cause of the Glee Club. And he's like, no, you're doing it for me. You're doing it because you love me. Not because you actually are a good teacher and care about the well-being of, like, the kids. And, you know, you coincidentally also had a thing with me. He tries to make her good teacherness and actually, as the guidance counselor, looking after this kid's well-being, like, he tries to make it about him, and I just want him to die. I just hate him so much in that moment that I couldn't control my anger. Anyway, was that just me, Caitlin? I assume you feel the same way.
No, he's the worst. And she's like, I'm seeing a dentist. Like, she's dating John Stamos. Leave her alone to go marry John Stamos. He's so much better.
and Will is just like, he's really pushing. He's like, you did this because you love me. And it's like, how about she's actually a good teacher? And despite the fact that you had a relationship that didn't work, she's still trying to help the children that you have put into this situation, basically. I hate him so much. And, so I love her in that moment. Hate him. Because he tries to make everything about him, as usual, you know, as he often does with the Glee Club, and he's actually not that good or selfless a teacher. And then Sue, you know, saves the Glee Club for another year. She goes and demands from Figgins that they get to stay because of, you know, her respect for allegedly Will's teaching and his, you know, treatment of the students, even though she doesn't like him as a person. Which I suppose is nice of her, even though he's a bad teacher. The kids still do deserve to stay, I suppose. But, Jack and Mitch, yeah, do you guys have any kind of thoughts about how the club gets ended and then saved again, I guess, for the season?
I thought it was nice for Sue to be the one that does save it back. And I think her reason is actually really funny how, like, she says that she will keep it just because she can terrorize them.
She can't imagine a world where she can't bully them or whatever.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. Like, it was, I liked it. It's not meant to be serious or anything. It was really funny. I liked it.
Well, on that note, I'm always kind of put off by her line about racist Disney characters talking about living in the bayou. No, that is not what happens in The Princess and the Frog. They're not racist.
Oh my god,
just stupid. Oh, I couldn't stand that joke. Whenever I watch it's this episode funny. Again, it torques me. I don't know. Some things, like, I wish I would find Sue funnier all the time if what she said was actually legitimate. And I know that sometimes that's supposed to be part of, like, her fanaticism, that she's like, I don't even know. Like, she's just insane. She pretends she's, like, superhuman sometimes and able to do crazy things. Whatever. That's neither here nor there. But I also find it interesting that Pickens is just like, I don't really care anymore. I'm just going to tell my wife that I had sex with you. Because he's, like, just 100% done with Sue's blackmailing. And he's to the point where he's willing to ruin his own relationship because he just doesn't want to deal with her anymore.
Just wants to leave him alone.
Yes.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
And I guess that had to be tied up because they keep on bringing it up. It's not something that you would imagine Glee bringing up as much as they have been. But they've been keeping that continuity going for so long.
She's kind of said, like, this is it. If you do this, we will never, like, you know,
talk about it. And to me, that was more of just, like, we really can't keep this going on past season one. I mean, like, this is a really big continuity point for us to continue on for multiple season arc. Is it really that important for us? It's really hard to remember continuity as is. This really can't be our one thing that we do.
Weird. Anyway, I suppose unless anyone has any thoughts about that entire episode, we've talked about the musical numbers of the performances at regionals. The other two were To Sir With Love, which the Glee Club sings at Schuster when they think that the club is getting disbanded. And then when it gets saved again, he sings them the, I can never freaking pronounce this guy's name, but the Israel, I think it's Kami Koale or something like that. He's a Hawaiian performer. And that cover of Somewhere Over the Rainbow is really, really famous, like that arrangement that Will sings to him. And so that's his cover of that. Does anyone have any thoughts about those two particular numbers, of the club's song to Will and Will's song to them?
Well, before to the two Sir with Love, I really, really liked the scene of them all going around and saying what they enjoyed about Glee Club. And even though I know we don't like Mr. Shuri, I still really, really liked them. Just saying, you know, Emma Sadie's line, Glee Club will never end because you are Glee Club and things like that. I enjoyed the setup before that number.
And then she says, you're in us all now.
I hated that. Like, not in general. In general, it was nice, but some of what was said, I was just like, ugh, especially because it was about Will. But, yeah.
I know.
But how much of a better note would it have been, quite literally, to end the show on To Sir With Love as opposed to Somewhere Over the Rainbow? Because it's just like, Will's just like, I mean, I guess Puck would just work for this one song, whatever. I'm just going to use him. Cool.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I didn't know what that song, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, was trying to, like, say, if you know what I mean. To Sir With Love, just in case anyone doesn't know, I don't know what people know or what people don't know. Mitch, I don't expect you to know at this point, no offense. To Sir With Love, it was a song by a pop singer called Lulu, who was also an actress who starred in a movie called To Sir With Love, which is a Sidney Poitier movie about a black guy who starts teaching in an East London or a South London school in the 60s, and it like deals with all these racial issues, and he basically changed. It's like one of those like a teacher changed everyone's lives movies, basically, and it's called To Sir With Love, and that's the theme song from that movie. I don't think that Will Schuster is as deserving of that song as Sidney Poitier, who taught people not to be racist. But that being said, you know, it was nice, and I actually really liked the musical number as a thing, even though I didn't think Will deserved that kind of compassion because I hate him. Anyway, yeah. Caitlin, did you have any thoughts about the musical numbers at the end?
I thought they were lovely moments. Will doesn't, like you said, Will doesn't deserve the sentiment, but they were very pretty.
Yeah. They were nice moments. I do think that they were really nice moments. However, yeah, it's a bit sickly to see that be about Will. That being said, should we go to the quotes and favorite moments, I suppose? How about quotes? You, Jack, did you have one?
Yep, so mine was a funny one, is when they're talking about how Sue's going to take down the Glee Club, yada yada, and then they're asking about, like, Brittany and Santana about how they know Sue's going to take down the Glee Club. And then all Brittany says is, yeah, she said, I'm going to crush Glee Club. And it was just the funnier the way she said it. It was hilarious.
Like, the way that she just said it. She literally said, yeah, I'm going to crush it. Yeah. Good times. Caitlin, how about you for quotes?
It physically pains me to give a quote to Will Schuster. But I liked the line. It was lovely, okay, even though Will Schuster said it. And it's really sad, yes, kind of in hindsight. So he says that life only really has one beginning and one end, and the rest is just a whole lot of middle. And I thought that was very sad, kind of considering what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine was also an overly emotional one as opposed to a funny one, which was basically, you know, shady, you know, wine cooler sex aside, when Puck and Quinn are in the hospital looking at Beth in the sort of oxygen chamber or whatever, you know, wherever that thing is, they put the babies. And, you know, she's just like...
Oxygen chamber sounds like something that alien would put a newborn specimen into.
Sorry, they do put premature babies into oxygen chambers. I don't know what that special room where they keep babies is, if you know just what I mean, nursery, if they have special air in there or something. Anyway, the point is, you know, he's kind of being like, you know, they're kind of talking about, you know, very, you know, quietly talking about what's happened. And, you know, she kind of says, just tell me one thing, like, did you really love me? And he goes, yes, especially now. And him being like that, I love him. He's an idiot, but I love him. And I just have so much time for him and so much hope for him. And I really hope that whatever he has in the final season is worth what he could be, if you know what I mean.
And I think that's starting to become more of the fandom's feeling too, Natalie, that they want Quinn and Puck to be back together because they're essentially the only original couple from the first season that we really can all get behind because they're still kind of trucking along, you know? They're in the same trajectory, I guess you could say.
Well, I mean, I hope the trajectory is a bit better than it currently is in the show, but we'll see.
Yeah, Natalie, that was the point I was going to pick. I was going to pick that one, but I knew you were going to do it, so I thought, no, I'll let
this one. Oh, thanks. Mitch, yours, did you want to go ahead with your quote, though, Mitch?
Yeah, totally. So my quote is just simply in the middle of Bo Rap when Quinn is going into labor. They're going into the delivery room, and she just kind of shouts out, "I want Mercedes to come too." And I was so touched because I looked back to the moment where Mercedes and Quinn had that heart-to-heart during the episode that Mercedes wanted to starve herself and was, you know, visioning food around and stuff. And that was what I saw as being the start of their relationship. And it led to this. And this is really cool because this is, like, they're such different people. They don't even like the same people. They just don't even follow the same crowd.
Yeah.
And then they just kind of, like, adapted to each other. And I think it's beautiful.
At this point, yeah, I mean, we didn't watch Funk, but within Funk, you know, she moves in with Mercedes as well, like, instead of living with Puck. So it's this kind of, like, closeness that, like, again, it's like, they should have remained best friends for the rest of the series, but...
They should have, and it's funny, too, that we've never seen Mercedes' house, now that I think of it, because we've seen, like, what, Quinn, Finn, Rachel's, Kurt's... But we never seen Mercedes. I mean, we've seen some of Puck's.
No, we haven't seen much of her family life. Yeah, we've seen a bit of Santana's, like, you know, grandmother. We've seen a lot of people's, like,
seen Britney's room, fondue for two,
like that. Yeah, Mercedes never. Anyway, poor Mercedes. But the actual favorite moments. Jack, did you want to? We'll go back the same order. Jack, did you want to do yours?
You guys are gonna hate me. I have to justify this moment. But, okay, I'm not a fan of Will Schuster, okay? In the first, maybe two seasons, and going into three, I didn't really think about how awful he was too much just because it just didn't cross my mind, and I thought there was more important things in the show. But, like, in seasons four and five, it's, like, that's what's really, really made me not, like, rewatching him now. It's just because I know how he is, and I can see a lot of his actions then, and how I felt towards those actions bleed over into what he's previously done. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is my moment was in Will's apartment when, not the fact that the kids were in the apartment, but when, like, Tina's crying and they're all really, really upset about Glee Club ending. Like, I didn't cry watching it again, but in previous times when I've rewatched this, I always got really upset about how they just, Rachel just wants to talk about what made them happy about Glee Club, but Tina says that she's not going to be able to talk to anyone else. And it was upsetting. And I really, really, really think that's a nice moment. It was great for me, at least.
Yeah, I don't think they should go over to a teacher's house, but yeah.
I mean, I don't think that either, but it's just what that scene, like, provided that I enjoyed.
Yeah, no, I know, but I'm like, I'm always weird about it. Anyway, Caitlin, what was yours?
So, mine was right before they go to do their number, and they have the little motivational moment, and... Again, it pains me to say this, but Will has this funny Will has a funny moment. He's like, "We have something no one else has," and everyone's like, "What?" He's like, "Finn's dancing." It's funny.
That's and very like Avatar: The Last Airbender humor.
It was cute. It broke the tension, and I liked that moment.
That's something Sokka would say easily.
Anyway,
to the library.
My favorite.
I love that everyone on this podcast gets that Avatar joke. That's great.
Now, maybe not all the listeners. My favorite was actually kind of just, we mentioned it in the plot, but sort of watching Emma scream at Figgins and just kind of remember how awesome she is and how, you know, again, she's going to be coming back for a little bit of season six. So hopefully she gets some, you know, good moments that aren't just, I'm Will's wife. I agree with him about things, which is like really sad and horrible. So let's hope for that. But, otherwise I really like Jesse during Bo Rap. I think he's so good, and all of the Puck moments as well. Like Puck's look on his face after Beth is born, like when he's just kind of like stunned and adorable. But yeah. Mitch, how about you?
Oh, well, he just reminded me of Puck's gross out face too.
Oh, the gross out face also, but yeah.
Yeah, that's cute. Yeah, mine's the allusion the newscaster makes to having had rompous sex with Freddie Mercury, probably during the period that Don't Stop Me Now was written, because he's just like, we didn't worry about labels, Sue. We just did as we wanted.
Yeah.
And it's funny, too, because he ends up, like, very rompously, like, attacking sexually, in a good way, if that's a good phrase to use, the other newscaster, like, on set, don't they? They just kind of, like, start
That already happened, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, like, so
he didn't watch,
He's a rather, I keep using this word rompous, he's a rather rompous sexual character. He just kind of goes for what he wants.
He's horrible.
And he does date Sue for a bit, too, and they tango. And
well, yeah, they fight that, and she sort of gets crushed by that, and that was in an episode we didn't watch. But, yeah. Okay, I mean, that's sort of the entire episode, basically. Does anyone have any sort of overall, like, you know, thoughts about season one? Like, you know, what really stood out for you, or what was really different from you on this rewatch of season one? Like, how you viewed it overall? Since watching it the first time or the last time you watched it. Jack, how about you in this season one rewatch?
I think the biggest thing for me that has changed, and I think it's, a lot of it is helped by, like, the discussions that we've had, like, on the podcast, is it really is just Kurt and how I remember, like, I was always so, like, I mean, I wasn't like Saint Kurt, which a lot of people are, and I remember just being on his side, and I think it's just because of how I felt, like, the language and the word that Finn used and stuff. But honestly, like, rewatching, I'm just like, Kurt is just terrible. Like, the way he behaves in this is just god awful. But everything else is, I guess, really just the same. I mean, it was pretty hard in certain areas watching Corey and even just on a character level watching Finn and Rachel. But other than that, it was actually not as emotionally traumatizing I thought it would be, because this is the first time I've watched season one since Corey's death, so I thought it would have been a lot worse, but no, it wasn't too bad, and I can't wait for season two.
Yeah. Caitlin, how did you feel about watching season one? You haven't watched it in a while, I assume.
Yeah, I'm the same about Kurt. I loved him the first time around, and now I think he's terrible. And I also really liked Will the first time I watched it. I know, it's shocking. Yeah, and now I'm like, what did I ever see in that man? He is the worst ever. So I have gone from liking a lot of people to hating their guts.
I can't believe there's a moment, Caitlin, where you liked Will.
I did. Shut I think up. I did in the first, like, 13. I was like, oh, yeah. Like, I didn't hate him, but I was like, oh, like, I didn't, like, love him either. I wasn't like, oh, my God, he's so good. But I wasn't like, oh, my God, you are the worst. All your decisions are terrible. I was just kind of like, okay, yeah, cool. He's, you know,
he's
fine. But same, like, Kurt. And I don't, like, I don't want to hate Kurt, but he is terrible. He's terrible. Mm-hmm. When it first came out, I would have been incredibly defensive, incredibly, you know, loving of him. Incredibly rose into glasses, because at the time there were pretty much, you know, there were no sort of queer teenagers this visible on this kind of level. None that were this interesting, I think, either. And now, from this perspective, I mean, you know, we're what, 5-6 years down the, you know, what is it, 5 years down the line. And I mean, it's not like we've had a complete, you know, 180 on that in television, but there are, you know, many more interesting characters around that are sort of, you know, better people than he is, basically. And it is a bit less like, oh, you know, everything Kurt does is forgivable because he's the only good gay kid on television, if you know what I mean. That is not there for me anymore, and therefore I am seeing him much more judgmentally, if that makes sense. Will, hate him so much. I feel really, and I feel a lot more, as I said, like the Kurt thing sort of ties into feeling a lot more compassion for Finn, and just watching him, instead of just, you know, looking at him as like this, you know, dumb guy, basically, like, sort of being able to see his struggle a bit more, not just with Kurt, but with just stuff in general. It was sort of less like dumbly funny and a bit more like, you know, painful in terms of not just Corey, but in terms of what Finn is like, and you know, how he had all of these, you know, emotions that he just didn't know what to do with, and how that's a pretty good example of what, you know, being a teenager is like for a lot of people. Mitch, how about you with season one? You know, any major kind of thoughts about the season now that we've finished it, or any major changes for you in how you originally viewed it? Or
what the risk of being a broken record for not only myself but everyone else? Yes, Kurt is a horrible human being. Do not care for him whatsoever, and I did used to like him a lot, oddly enough. Yeah, so those rose-colored glasses are shattered. Very much. I didn't see anything of this Mercedes and Quinn relationship whatsoever when I first watched the show, and now I can't get enough of it, and I'm really sad it doesn't come back. Hopefully they'll Well, I mean, yeah. I can write a whole list of all the things that I wish that they would bring up in the final. I feel like I'm talking about the final Harry Potter book again. Like, I hope J.K. Rowling writes about XYZ again. But it's nice to see that, and thinking positively, as opposed to, you know, the harping we're doing on Will and Kurt, I hope this is positive. I really appreciate seeing Corey, when I considered to be his prime, when I considered to be him to be very raw, and he didn't seem to, I suppose, I mean, from a little bit of knowledge I have of his lifestyle, have as many things going on distracting him from Glee. He seemed very focused to me. And it's not that he doesn't seem unfocused later on. It's just that there's a certain quality, especially in the first 13, that Corey has that I don't know how you can tell an actor to capture that moment. It's more of just embedded in them to, you know, can't stop this feeling kind of stuff. Like that stuff is just... it's great, and I really appreciate those really touching moments that we have of Corey in the first season.
Yeah, he was so good. Like, they did it, like, that's the thing, like, you know, watching Finn, like, watching him do that, like, it, and, like, you know, as opposed to just being like, oh, this is just some guy, you know, playing some simple guy, like, there is a lot of complexity there that I feel really bad for the character a lot of the time, watching it like this, and he was so good, and yeah, it is horrible, but yeah, in general, season one, God, it's been a bit of a throwback, and I was just, there are a couple of moments in a couple of the episodes where I just sort of started crying, not for any reason really, except that it was like, I was just remembering how much this meant to me at the time. Like, not even like, oh, seeing this scene means so much, but just the amount that Glee, like, meant to me at the time. Like, the amount of obsession or whatever, and the strength of my feelings about it. And I just sort of became overwhelmed with, like, what a big part of, like, my life it had been, and how, like, overwhelming it was when it started. Like, and it was just like, yeah, so I just had, like, emotion tap turned on to full it a few times, and it was really weird, but yeah. Anyway, if no one has any further thoughts, we shall close up and go away and emotionally prepare for season two, I suppose. Anyone?
It's fun. Anyone I can't remember. I can't remember anything that happens in season two specifically, other than Blaine is introduced, as are the
and
Warblers.
Sam.
Yeah, I already forgot about that. That's the thing. That's how awesome that's how awesome my memory's being right now. No, I'm excited to that aspect. I'm very
excited for my TV boyfriend Sam Evans, and also Blaine, obviously.
Yeah.
That the Blaine stuff is going to be a bit of a rompily ride for me. It's going to be that time of the Warblers starting on Glee and of Darren starting on Glee was one of the weirdest periods of my life. Like, well, one of the weirdest periods of my life that hasn't, like, had something to do with me personally, if you know what I mean. Like, it was weird for me, and it was a very, like, it was just so, like, intensely strange, everything that was going on, and, like, I was really following, like, the press of Glee really closely, and it was, I'll be able to remember, like, when we watch the episodes, I'll be able to remember so much about, like, what was going on in the Glee world around that episode at that time. Like, crazily close. So, season two was intense. So, yes, we'll go off and prepare for that, I suppose. And you should hear from us 2 weeks, again, like a fortnightly show. We'll be, you know, providing, you know, barring any accidents or extremities, we will be back to start season two with you guys. So, yeah, if anyone has any closing remarks, feel free to make them now.
I'll give a PSA.
I just can't wait to see when Brian was actually good. Sorry.
Oh!
Rude!
Sorry.
Zach is going to have a bit of a war. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see that progression, because Blaine is a character that
I think his characterization has been very consistent, but they have sort of flip-flopped a few things with him, like his social role and various things. Yeah.
Yeah, for the most part, it's going to be good, because I did like Blaine in season 2. I really did like him. So that's what I'm saying. So I'm excited to watch when he was good. I will leave it at that.
and it has yet to stop.
Oh, good. This is going to be fun. Anyway, we've got a Beast, you know, Beast and her whole plot line, Kurovsky and his whole plot line. We've got all sorts of things to come.
The first Christmas episode is in season 2, isn't it? Oh,
Christmas episode, John Stamos, all sorts.
And then Rocky Horror is their musical this year.
Yeah, I'm mainly excited for Sam and Blaine, but Sam. But also Blaine.
Sam and Quinn. I like Sam and Quinn. Yeah.
Oh, I don't. But
Lucky.
Anyway. Well,
Lucky is what I'm looking forward
to. That song is great.
Yeah.
But that being said, but I don't care about the song. Them as a couple is bland and boring as hell. And Britannia, I suppose, like Brittany and a lot of Santana development in season 2. So, well, things to look forward to, I suppose. We'll start picking out the episodes. If you've got any season 2 episodes that you think are, like, majorly important ones, I can guarantee you will be doing the pilot, like the season 1 premiere, and also Never Been Kissed. We'll probably have a couple in, you know, or two in between there, but I can definitely tell you Never Been Kissed is on there, and part and the season 1 premiere is on there. So we'll go from there, basically. So I guess we'll see you guys later, and thank you for hanging out with us on Glee Chat and sticking with us with the flashbacks. We put up a Glee quiz about the first 13 episodes. Jack got them all right. That's nice. If you want to go and do that, we'll be doing
it
on the same on sort of the alternating weeks to Glee Chat. There'll be a Glee quiz going up, covering right up until season 5. So we'll have the back 9, and then we'll have a season 2, season 3, etc. quiz going fortnightly on Hyperbole as well. So if you are listening along, go and do some, you know, test your knowledge on the throwbacks, little trivia in the quiz if you want to. But
you have to be Jack to win. I'm gonna give you that much, because
I saw a few people I was like, is this too hard? But a few people got 13 out of 13, so maybe it wasn't too hard. We can work together on some questions for the next one, maybe, because I might have been a bit too I might have been a bit too hard, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, we should all say bye. So, bye-bye, everyone.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.